Well, looks like a woman.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
Sunday, February 19, 2023. This is your award-winning Kibonation Media Assassination, episode 1531.
This is No Agenda.
Using my blowhole to broadcast live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region number 6 in the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where we're hoping you're going to shoot down some more hobbyist balloons. Bastards. I'm John C. Dvorak.
Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
It wasn't just hobbyists. It was a ham radio hobbyist balloon.
Well, that was one of them.
Yeah. Just one. You know how I have always joked about plastic surgeons who say, just a few days of bruising, ma'am. You know that? Yeah. It turns out oral surgeons are very similar.
But they're all surgeons.
Just a sore for a day or two. John, my mouth is so taut from the swelling, it's like I'm talking through a blowhole.
Yeah, you used a blowhole joke earlier. Yeah,
well, you didn't say anything, so I wanted to make sure you heard it.
You sound 10 by 10.
Yeah, 5 by 5. I know. But it hurts.
6 by 6.
It hurts.
You square, whatever.
It hurts when I laugh. So let's make it a regular old show. Do you mind? Just not too funny.
The regular old shows are pretty humorous. I do have my book here.
Your book?
It's called
book?
Jokes, Puns, and Riddles by David Allen Clark. Hold on.
Let's not do that. No.
This is a book from, I'm going to tell you something. It's interesting.
No.
This book is from 1968.
Yeah.
So this is hippie humor.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, I could read anything from this book, and I guarantee you won't laugh.
Oh, that would make sense. Hippie humor is generally just not funny.
Question.
Okay.
When is spanking like a hat?
I don't know. When is spanking like a hat, John?
When it is felt.
Oh, man. Did Marty write this book? Sorry. Ow, I hurt myself.
I didn't do it.
All right.
Maybe your Weisenheimer one-liner should be stuck, put a halt.
That's what it is. The Munich Security Conference is on.
I have a clip.
I have a clip, too. But since I called it, I'll do the overview, and then we'll see what you have. I got a couple of things here. This is the annual conference. Everyone gets together in Deutschland. Last year, of course, Zelensky was there in his civilian suit to recommend that everyone get ready for the war. And now we're 1 year further. And here's an overview of what the leaders had to say, including Herr Zelensky himself.
Zelensky set the tone, comparing Ukraine's fight against Russia to David and Goliath.
He will definitely fall already this year. We can make it. All of us together, just as David did. We can make sure that there is no alternative to our victory.
Ukraine's president urged Western leaders to act quickly.
We need to hurry up. We need the speed of our agreements, speed of our delivery to strengthen our sling, speed of decisions to limit Russian potential.
While Zelensky pushed for speed, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz argued for caution.
We will continue to maintain the balance between providing the best possible support to Ukraine and avoiding an unwanted escalation.
But Scholz also challenged Western countries to deliver unpromised weapons.
This means that everyone who can supply these battle tanks should actually do so now.
French President Emmanuel Macron's backing for Ukraine remains firm.
We must absolutely intensify our support for the resistance of the Ukrainian people and army for leading the counteroffensive, which alone will enable credible negotiations under the conditions chosen by Ukraine, its authorities, its people.
All right, so that's the overview. Sounds pretty boring. Although Zelensky is almost...
My overview is a little better than that.
Yeah, okay, I'm glad. I was just going to finish by saying...
This is an actual overview. It doesn't really bring in any details like what you just... That's more detail. No, this is the Munich Security Conference clip.
The Munich Security Conference kicks off today in Bavaria, Germany. The meeting is an annual gathering of experts, senior politicians, and heads of state for talks on global security policy. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz and French President Emmanuel Macron have arrived at the venue to meet with other European leaders. Their speeches will follow opening remarks by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Also among the guests are UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, European Commission head Ursula von der Leyen, and NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. Representing the US is Vice President Kamala Harris.
I see why you were so jacked about playing your clip, because now, you did thing, work.
What is she doing there?
Well, she was there last year, if you recall. She is the representative. She's there to say, with the passage of time, and Zelensky is almost quoting song lyrics. We can make it. We can make it. Looks like we made it. I'm telling you, this is almost over, but not until we shake down the people of the United States, the UK, the EU, and back home, we had the representatives telling us how they're going to take it from us.
And they'll deliver much needed humanitarian assistance, as well as food, water, medicine, shelter, and other aid to Ukrainians displaced by Russia's war, and provide aid for those seeking refuge in other countries from Ukraine. And it's also going to help schools and hospitals open. It's going to allow pensions and social support to be paid to the Ukrainian people so they have something in their pocket. It's also going to provide critical resources to address food shortages around the globe.
Yeah, no, they need their pensions. You know, we don't need our pensions.
We're giving them cash?
Yes. Screw you, America, with your pensions. We're giving them cash. We're giving them food. What, you hungry? You hungry? You should go to Ukraine. Yeah. So
do you look at the homeless situation around here? I know they must have homeless in D.C.
Oh, a lot of homeless in D.C. It's been bad for a long time once you cross the border of Foggy Bottom. So here's Mitch McConnell, leader of the Republicans.
We're listening to the Ukrainians saying they don't have enough ammo.
By the way, on Fox News with Dana Perino.
We're listening to the Ukrainians saying they don't have enough ammo. And even our Defense Department is saying we might have to figure out a way to get more funding so that we have enough ammo for ourselves and to give to allies like Ukraine.
What funding? This is such a scam. We are being stolen from right before our very eyes. Oh, we don't have enough bullets. Not enough ammo. We need more funding. Wait, but we haven't figured out the debt limit yet. Oh, it's going to be so fun.
What is Biden's responsibility in trying to make sure that people in America whose support for Ukraine is softening will want to continue to try to help them?
Well, I'm going to try to help explain to the American people that defeating the Russians in Ukraine is the single most important event going on in the world right now.
I don't care what you think. It's the single most important thing in the entire world. Even if you're hungry, even if you have no jingle jangle in your pocket, it's all about Ukraine. That's the most important thing.
It will save us an enormous amount of money down the road if the Ukrainians can succeed. They're not asking for any of our personnel.
Wait a minute. It's an investment, people. It'll save us money down the road if the Ukrainians can succeed. It's really, you should see it as an investment in your children's
money in the bank.
Investment in your children's future.
It will save us an enormous amount of money down the road if the Ukrainians can succeed. They're not asking for any of our personnel. They're asking us for financial help. The Europeans are stepping up.
By the way, financial help? No, Dana Perino just opened by saying, man, we need money for the military-industrial complex. We're out of ammo. They're out of ammo. And then he says, well, we need money for them. No. We're being robbed. We're being robbed by the military-industrial complex. And they're just going to keep going until someone stops it.
They're not asking for any of our personnel. They're asking us for financial help.
You keep saying, yeah, they are. What are they asking for?
They're asking for our personnel. They'd love to have our personnel over there.
They have our personnel. Some of this money is going to the mercenaries. That's our personnel.
Well, not only just mercenaries. According to that clip that I played last show, U.S. Army.
Yes.
That guy wasn't a mercenary he was talking about.
No, he was an advisor.
Oh, yes, an advisor. Advisor with a gun.
An advisor.
Oh, it cannot be neutral.
Yeah, here's how it goes. Let me show you, let me advise you how to do this. You point over there. Now, I'm going to pull the trigger. This is just advice, okay?
culture makes choices in times like the...
Oops, sorry.
Down the road, if the Ukrainians can succeed. They're not asking for any of our personnel. They're asking us for financial help. The Europeans are stepping up. They've done an awful lot that seems not to be recognized. For example, handling enormous numbers of refugees. In terms of the cost of...
Man, I keep doing that. We're not recognizing how good the Europeans are. The Europeans are really... They're actually better than us. Because we're just not recognizing how much they've done.
An awful lot that seems not to be recognized. For example, handling enormous numbers of refugees. In terms of the cost of it, Dana, it's about 0.02% of our gross domestic product.
Oh, well, let's not give that to Americans. It's just a little bit. So, what is it? $130 billion is just... 0.02% of our... Why don't we give another 0.02% of the GDP to Americans? This, I cannot believe that anyone sitting at home going, oh yeah, we really got to help out Ukraine. It seems like this must be falling on deaf ears.
We are also monitoring very carefully the money that's being spent. There should be a bipartisan support.
Oh, bull crap.
What?
I said, bull crap. They can't even audit the Pentagon, let alone figure out where that money's going. If you remember when this war first started and they started shipping money over there, they lost track of it immediately.
It was $400 million. I don't know. Even someone pointed out to me the clip you played on the last show about running out of ammunition. They actually said the ammunition is lost. They didn't say it's like missing. It's missing. And it is so obvious.
We are also monitoring very carefully the money that's being spent.
Uh-huh.
There should be a bipartisan support for this. My biggest criticism of the president is he seems not to have done enough soon enough.
More.
If he moved more rapidly, we might have been able to help the Ukrainians have even more success than they've already had. But it seems like these weapon systems tend to get there a little too late on every occasion.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
Well, Dana Perino, representative, news model for the military industrial complex. Exactly.
To get there a little too late on every occasion.
Exactly.
I'm sorry public opinion is sliding, but I want to reassure the American people that this is enormously important. We need to stay together on a bipartisan basis in our country and defend these people who are bravely fighting for freedom and for democracy in Ukraine.
All right, so this is the new narrative. By the way, I didn't hear Dana Perino say anything in this report, even when she asked the question about support sliding. So support is sliding. He's aware of it. They're aware, but he just brought that in without any prompting. The same is happening in Europe. And Queen Ursula gave an interview, she a very stressful interview. It was kind of a stand-up thing at the Munich Security Conference. I think someone stopped her on the balustrade. That's a international speak for balcony. And then she got a whole bunch of mics jammed in her face, and she couldn't get away from it. And if you look close at her, she is her lizard reptile mouth is starting to show. She has all the little creases, lines all around her mouth now, which she could easily solve with some injectables. Just a few days of bruising. But now it just looks, it really makes her look like a reptile. So a couple of questions here. And the first one is, of course, the people of the EU who have millions of refugees who have come into the EU countries. Poland would be number one, I would say. But they're in the Netherlands, they're in France, they're everywhere. And support is sliding. People, after a year of having this go on, people are starting to get weary. And luckily, she has a solution.
Europe has taken in millions of Ukrainian refugees, and towns have been very supportive. They want to help these people, but they are saying they're straining under the onslaughting of refugees. What can you do to help them? Because they are saying they're reaching limit.
First of all, yes, I want to acknowledge and thank from the bottom of my heart all these people, the Europeans, who have opened their hearts and their homes to the Ukrainian refugees. This
hearts
is amazing. And And I understand that this is straining over time. This is why we introduced the Temporary Protection Directive, which means basically direct access for the Ukrainians to the labor market, to the schooling system, to the health system, and to social security.
Oh, okay. So it's going to get so much better, Europe. Now, the EU has decided, apparently, through this special mechanism, that the refugees can get access to your children's schools, to your social services, and your social money. Okay, so don't worry about it. It's going to be there for a while, but we're going to take care of it. We're paying for them with your money.
Use the Temporary Protection Directive, which means basically direct access for the Ukrainians to the labor market, to the schooling system, to the health system, and to social security.
Yeah.
Also to help...
Hey, wait a minute. Social Security. Wait a minute. Biden said we need to give them money for Social Security. Is this our money? Hold on. So let me just go back and listen to the end of Biden there. Where is he? I mean, we heard that, right? Let me just check here. Let's see. It was the last bit of Biden.
People, so they have something in their pocket. It's also going to provide critical resources to address food shortages around pensions and social support to be paid to the Ukrainian people, so they have something.
Pensions, okay, no, not the same thing. Well, I thought we were paying for it.
Direct access for the Ukrainians to the labor market, to the schooling system, to the health system, and to social security. Also to help take the burden off the shoulder of the ordinary people who did a great job.
So when do you see this coming? Zelensky said at this conference that he would think that...
Stop it. She said for the ordinary people who did a great job. Is that what she said?
Yes, they did a great job.
A fleeing?
Great job.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I hear you. This is gobbledygook.
When do you see peace coming? Peace.
Ah, here we come. Here comes the peace question. Now we've been paying attention to the peace. When is peace coming?
At this conference, that he will think that the next Munich conference, that would be a post-war conference. Do you also believe that this war will be over within a year?
I will not make any predictions because this is not to put in words for me at the moment being. Important is, as Ukraine is fighting for our basic values, for the respect for the international law, for the UN Charter, and for the fact that today you cannot send tanks across a border and unleash such an aggression. So Ukraine is really fighting for...
What do you think that means? We can't send tanks across the border? I'm not quite... What do you think that she's talking about here?
Never play it again.
Basic values for the respect...
Back a little bit.
Words for me at the moment being. Important is, as Ukraine is fighting for our basic values, for the respect for the international law, for the UN Charter.
Ah, okay, there it goes. This is important. Respect for international law, respect for the UN Charter. Here we go.
At the moment being. Important is, as Ukraine is fighting for our basic values, for the respect for the international law, for the UN Charter, and for the fact that today you cannot send tanks across a border and unleash such an aggression. So
I guess that's what she's referring to, Putin sending tanks across the border.
Exactly.
I guess, yeah.
Ukraine is really fighting for existential values that we have, and therefore full support from our side. Putin's imperialistic plan must fail.
A little bit more on the timeline. Are you going to be proposing this formally? Is the what's the next steps in this proposal? And one of the problems has been that even though there has been money, for example, through NATO, countries have not signed contracts, and that has slowed the whole process down. How can you ensure that once you have the money on the table, the contracts are signed and production can start?
Okay, now what she just throws out there, this lady's in the know somehow. She works for Deutsche Welle. Production can start. I think this is about more weapons, but she's saying there's no contracts. She said, you know, what's the timeline for kicking Putin's ass, because the contracts have not been signed.
It is important because of the lack of contracts to give a certain amount of certainty to the defense industry. Ooh. And these are the advanced purchase.
Oh, they want long-term contracts. The defense industry doesn't just want like a, you know, just a little thing. No, no, no. We want long-term certainty in contracts.
Of contracts to give a certain amount of certainty to the defense industry. And these are the advanced purchase agreements that we have good experiences with.
Yeah.
And for that, it needs a European approach because it cannot rest on the shoulders of one country, for example. So this is the approach. The second is we have the institutions in place. So we should not create something new, but we should use the European Peace Facility, which has a coordination mechanism with Ukraine.
I love it. The European Peace Facility, which funds the military-industrial complex. It's great.
We have the institutions in place, so we should not create something new, but we should use the European Peace Facility, which has a coordination mechanism with Ukraine already in place. We can use the so-called OCCAR, which is a procurement institution that knows all the mechanism. So for me, be practical, be fast, and these are the ingredients that we're going to put together.
All right, be practical, be fast. Let's get the money to the military-industrial complex as quickly as possible. Now, back to the peace process. It looks like the pieces are coming together. And you know what I see happening is not an actual victory. You know, oh, it's all up to Ukraine. Not a victory on the field, but there will be an agreement. There will be negotiations, and that will end the war. And we're getting pretty close. The mechanism seems to be the IPCC, the International Criminal, the ICCC, International Criminal Court, Special Tribunal.
But one question, you mentioned Vice President Harris's speech. Is this a change in tone from the White House?
This is significant in that the U.S. now does formally consider Russia to have committed crimes against humanity. But how to actually hold Russia accountable is a huge question that countries are grappling with right now. Ukraine is calling for a special international tribunal to try Vladimir Putin, but that seems a long way off for now.
Maybe not. Maybe not. We go over to CNN. Anandpour and Company, Christiana Anandpour, globalist extraordinaire. They have on Bill Browder, who himself is a very interesting figure, who got basically kicked out of Russia. And if there's money to be had, I'm sure he would have an interest in hanging around to get some of it. He can probably prove that he deserves some of it. So he is telling the Anandpour, CNN and Company exactly what the mechanism is, how it's going to work and why.
Explain to me the mechanics of confiscating their central bank reserves.
This is Russia's $600 million for starters.
Well, so at the moment,
those reserves
are protected by something called sovereign immunity. Sovereign immunity means that anything that belongs to a country, a state, can't be taken away. You can't like just move into the embassy because you would like that property because it belongs to that country. And normally that would be a reasonable thing, and that's how international law has worked for the last, you know, many, many years. Now, Putin has redefined international crime. He has redrawn the borders of Europe. He's invaded a foreign country. He's killed, he's been a mass murderer, killed unimaginable numbers of people. And so we're sitting there in this situation where he's redefined international crime. And we're sitting there saying, and your money is still protected. We need to redefine international law to elevate it to the level of the way he's become an international criminal. And what does that mean specifically? That means that laws have to be passed in a number of major developed countries, which says that sovereign immunity always applies in every single circumstance, except in the circumstance when a country has invaded a neighboring country and committed an act of aggression, which is how this war is being defined under legal terms. So that's the one narrow circumstance where sovereign immunity no longer applies. If we did that, if the United States and the European Union and Great Britain and Canada and Japan rewrote their laws to say that sovereign immunity applies in all circumstances other than those, then we could then confiscate their money. We wouldn't be doing it illegally. We'd be doing it based on a law that's being rewritten to adapt itself to the current situation.
Easy.
And of course.
Yes.
She brings up the point that one of the staples of Western civilization is the avoidance of ex post facto laws, right?
No, I don't think that was in there. For some reason, it just didn't come up. No, this is what's so beautiful is there. Yeah, what you just said is, okay, we're going to convict somebody based upon a law we wrote after the atrocity. Well, I guess they could just wait, change the law, and then say, oh, crimes against humanity. Because, as you know, invading another country is a crime against humanity. It's not like any of our presidents would fall under that, but Putin would. And it looks like we just might have a venue for the negotiation as we have the trial going on in The Hague in the Netherlands under the joint investigation team, the same team that convicted Putin of being behind the Malaysian downing from a rocket shot off from in Ukraine. But of course, that was Putin. It looks like there may be a venue for peace negotiations, which I think would leave Putin with whatever he has with Crimea, the Donbass. He keeps all that. He just, you know, just stays on that border. We cover that up with a whole, you know, with guys with black and white tunics on in the court, and we'll have a big show trial. They'll probably have his head on a stick in the, you know, in the docket. So it looks like we actually have him there. And this is where it looks like the peace negotiation may take place.
Could the war in Ukraine end sooner than expected? I know we have been asking this question for quite some time now, but some unexpected developments have forced us to ask this question again. Developments like these: Alexander Lukashenko inviting the American President Joe Biden to Minsk. What for? To end the Ukraine war. For the unversed, Lukashenko is the president of Belarus and one of Vladimir Putin's closest allies. In fact, they are best friends of sorts. So when a man like this extends an olive branch to the West, when he makes offers like these to the U.S. president, one has to take them rather seriously.
Yeah, Putin won't even go. He'll send somebody else. They're going to end this. After we've signed the long-term contracts, we need 2 years' worth of ammo and training, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that signal has now gone out to the military-industrial complex. One more time, boys. We do a 2-year long-term contract, and then we're just going to cut it down and stop it slowly, move it over to China, which is where the new focus belongs. And the only problem is we have a couple of a-hole journalists. That's the problem we still got to fix, because our buddy Matt Lee, AP Diplo writer, is back. He's back giving people a hard time at the State Department. In this case, Matt Lee grills Rear Admiral Kirby on who actually is the aggressor here. Did Russia get closer to NATO, or did NATO get closer to Russia?
Say the reason that the Russian army is on NATO, the Russian army is at NATO's doorstep, is because NATO has expanded rather than the Russians expanding. That, in other words, NATO has moved closer to Russia rather than Russia moving closer to NATO. Is that not an accurate way to look at this?
I think that's the way President Putin probably looks at it. It's certainly not the way that we look at it.
You don't think that NATO has expanded eastward toward Russia?
NATO has expanded, okay. and the expansion been a good thing for...
So the reason that the Russian army is at NATO's doorstep is not the fault of the Russian army, it's not the Russian army that's done it. It's NATO has moved closer to move
east.
I'm pretty
sure it wasn't NATO who was ordering, you know, upwards of 15 battalion tactical groups to within 10 kilometers of the border with Ukraine. And I'm pretty sure it wasn't NATO who put little green men inside Ukraine to destabilize eastern
states. I'm pretty sure that Ukraine is not a member of NATO.
No, that was Victoria Nuland who put little green men inside the Maidan.
So unless that's changed.
It's not changed. But I'm pretty sure the movement by Russia is
if NATO has moved east, the reason that the Russian army is closer or on NATO's doorstep is because NATO moved.
Is not an anti-Russia alliance. NATO is a security alliance.
For 50 years, it was an anti-Soviet alliance. So do you not understand it? Do you not understand how, or can you not even see how the Russians would perceive it as a threat? And the fact that it keeps getting closer to their border while their troops... I mean, the places where their troops are, you say their troops are, and may have been in Ukraine and Georgia, are not NATO members.
I'm not going to pretend to know what goes in President Putin's mind or Russian military commanders. I barely got a history degree at the University of South Florida.
Stop this.
How about that? How about that?
Why would somebody, this is like the guy says, look, I'm a D student.
Yeah.
So I don't understand this sort of thing. Yeah. Well, then what are you even doing in this position? We don't want D's. Is this you an equity hire?
It seems like it at this point. He's really struggling. He's really struggling with this.
Well, he's claiming to be a dummy from South Florida.
Yeah,
Kirby, the admiral,
rear admiral, retired. Yeah.
By the way, I got a note from someone saying when we did the discussion about Kirby being a woman.
Well, when you brought this up, yes.
I think it was a woman that wrote in and said, until you started talking about it, I always thought she was a woman.
No.
Yes,
I believe you.
So this happened to me, by the way, with Laura Ingraham,
mm-hmm.
when she was on the radio.
Oh, you thought Frau Ingraham was Herr Ingraham?
When she's on the radio, I don't know how they mic'd her or what they did or how they EQ'd her. I don't know what it was, but if I just accidentally, I'm driving around and actually turn her show on, I thought it was some dude.
Laura Ingraham here.
I thought it was some dude.
Years, it was an anti-Soviet alliance. So what do you not understand it? Do you not understand how, or can you not even see how the Russians would perceive it as a threat?
Now, that's the question. His answer is even more baffling when you think about what this simple question is.
And the fact that it keeps getting closer to their border while their troops, I mean, the places where their troops are, you say their troops are, and they may have been in Ukraine and Georgia, are not NATO members.
I'm not going to pretend to know what goes in President Putin's mind or Russian military commanders. I mean, okay. I barely got a history degree at the University of South Florida.
Oh, man, that is so stupid.
What I can tell you is that NATO is a defensive alliance. It remains a defensive alliance.
Fair enough, but it has moved east, correct? I mean, that's just
the fact. It has expanded, absolutely.
Right, exactly.
But there's no reason for anybody to think the expansion is a hostile or threatening move. And we've been saying that throughout the last 15 years, no, Matt.
You're moving closer to Russia. You're blaming the Russians for being close to NATO.
No.
That's exactly what Hegel said.
We're blaming the Russians for violating the territorial integrity of Ukraine and destabilizing the security
which is not a NATO member. Which is not a NATO member.
I see
other countries feel threatened.
Yeah, goodbye. Way to go, Matt. It's the only guy left, I think.
I barely got a history degree in the University of South Florida. South Florida, not even University of Florida, but University of South Florida, whatever the hell that is.
One more clip here. Wow. Luckily, you know, we need to keep the German people happy. You know, we got to keep them involved because, they actually still have some capacity to make some weapons. I would say they, except for Airbus, they pretty much are what's left of the defense industry in the EU. So let's bring Zelensky and Sean Penn into a film festival, shall we?
Art cannot be neutral. Culture makes choices in times like these. The words of Zelensky at the opening gala of this year's Berlinale Film Festival.
Today, Russia wants to build the same wall in Ukraine. A wall between us and Europe, to separate Ukraine from its own choice and its own future.
Now in its 73rd year, the Berlinale's roots are deeply political in nature, its foundations laid in the first phase of the Cold War. In addition to Ukraine, pro-democracy protests in Iran will also feature at the festival. Guests from the world of show business and politics shared the red carpet with Iranian demonstrators. This year, 19 films will be competing for the Golden and Silver Bear Awards. Outside the main competition, films due to be screened cover topics from race and history in the U.S. to gender transition and sexual identity.
Oh, man, I can't believe we missed that film festival. Sounds like some great, great submissions this year. Gender identity, LGBTQ.
And there's nothing more entertaining than that.
One other thing happened at the...
Show business, man.
somehow they still have this feeble idea that we can reach the people and convince them through celebrities and show business. I think that left somewhere mid-pandemic worldwide. People are not interested anymore. But what else happened at the Munich Security Conference is the canceled meeting between Abe Lincoln And Liu Yi, I think it is, the Secretary of State for China, kind of took place, but there were some jabs back and forth.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with his Chinese counterpart Wang Yi during the Global Security Conference in Munich. Now, this is the first face-to-face meeting between the two leaders since the U.S. military shot down a suspected Chinese surveillance balloon earlier this month. Taking to Twitter, Blinken said that he warned Wang Yi against violations of its airspace after a Chinese spy balloon flew over North America. Blinken further asserted on how it was unacceptable and irresponsible for China to send a spy balloon into the American airspace. Earlier on Saturday, Wang Yi took a swipe at Washington, accusing it of violating international norms with what Beijing calls unbelievable and almost hysterical behavior. Beijing has also denied using spy balloons and says that the balloon was for weather research.
So you have to go to WION to get this information. I don't think we'd hear anywhere in the U.S. media that the Chinese foreign secretary said, man, this is like you're hysterical. This is hysterical behavior. Stop it, you woman. That's basically what he said. And added to that, it was a weather balloon, which we also have. All I heard was, oh, the Chinese said sorry. No, it was. They say clearly it's a weather balloon. So what is it?
Well, since they're digging pieces of it up, or trying to, from the bottom of the 40 feet down, it's not that far, we'll find out. I think that they've been, and this has been going on for a while now, so I think I think the information is being suppressed.
Yeah, we'll find out. Uh-huh.
That's sure, what I said. This sure. information is yeah. being suppressed.
I got a note from the same producer who told me about the why the F-22 did what it did. And by the way, the F-22 is the most sophisticated aircraft. I mean, this whole F-22 was almost, the way I picked it up, is a sales job. Hey, look what our plane can do. We can shoot balloons. The PRC balloon engagement was at the ragged edge of the F-22's operational envelope. That means the altitude. The higher altitude is harder for the airframe to maneuver. Therefore, that engagement required Mach 1.3. The other engagements, in order to fly, because you know there's almost no air up there, you need speed. And otherwise, you're going to fall out of the sky. So that's why the Mach 1.3. The other engagements were at much slower speed since they were at lower altitudes, but still too dangerous to use guns for the aforementioned reason, because you could actually wind up flying through the debris at that speed. A pilot, our source says, told me that the F-22 not being able to use guns above 50,000 feet, as they look for some other references, but pilots were too busy creaming themselves over a raw demonstration of air power. See, this is what it was. It was a sales job. But it appears that you just can't use the guns at 50,000 feet because you're going too fast, and you have to fly fast to stay afloat or airborne.
Well, These random assertions are one thing. It's not
a random assertion. It's from someone who. Okay. Yes, you contacted who?
The Defense Department.
Oh, where you get the truth? Did you talk to Kirby?
I didn't say I was going to get the truth. I also contacted Lockheed, mm-hmm. and the woman seems to be on vacation over the holiday.
Oh yeah.
But the Defense Department said that information is classified.
No. Of course, it's the F-22. We can't. It's classified.
That plane is 25 years old. How long is everything going to remain classified?
Wait. The F-22. I thought the F-22 was like the brand new hot shit machine.
Yeah,
that's 25 years old.
Yeah, it is.
No,
doesn't mean it's new.
Are you sure this is the fifth gen?
Well, the fifth gen, yeah, they keep upgrading it. I'm not saying it's the same version they made 25 years ago.
Okay. All right. So my answer versus yours. I have an answer. You get it's classified. All right. Well, that makes sense. Right.
I would have to assume that there's. I don't know why they. It just doesn't make sense. I told. In fact, the second guy got a hold of me and he said he wanted to try to. Get me some answers, but he couldn't do it.
Right on cue, we have China also being dicks to our neighbors to the north. This was big story in in Canada. People sending me links about it the whole time.
Justin Trudeau!
It was exactly the result Beijing wanted.
You are sending us back to work.
At least according to a Globe and Mail report. It said a top secret CSIS documents detailing Beijing's sophisticated strategy to influence the 2021 election. According to the report, China targeted specific conservative candidates in hopes of a liberal minority government.
Justin Trudeau knew about this interference.
The opposition accuses the prime minister of covering it up.
He is perfectly happy to let a foreign authoritarian government interfere in our elections as long as they're helping him.
Trudeau said he's never hidden China's attempts to interfere.
We have, like I said, known for a long time that China and others engage in foreign interference in Canada, including during our elections.
Okay. People are upset about this. Rightfully so. And right,
what are they? Why don't they just vote this guy out then?
No, because there was they can't, because the election fraud was, you know, was manipulated by China. It's impossible. When Russia does it to us, Trump wins. You know, when China does it to Canadians, Trudeau wins. It always works. Apparently. Anyway, right on cue, China, as if they are playing along with the script, does this.
Tonight, tensions rising after the U.S. National Security Council says North Korea launched an intercontinental ballistic missile that landed in Japanese waters. This new video released earlier today showing what Japanese military officials say appears to be a missile falling from the sky.
This is an outrageous act which escalates the level of provocation against the international community. Such act is absolutely unacceptable.
The United States also strongly condemning North Korea, saying this launch is a flagrant violation of multiple UN Security Council resolutions. Japanese officials say the missile was launched from the suburbs of Pyongyang, flying for nearly 66 minutes and roughly 560 miles before falling into the Japanese exclusive economic zone west of the island of Hokkaido. So far, no reports of ships or aircraft damaged.
What's extraordinary about this video is that you can see the actual flames when it zooms in on the missile body falling. That suggests that this came awfully close to landing on Japanese soil.
Officials say today's launch is the first ICBM test since back in November, when North Korea fired the powerful Hwasong-17 ICBM.
So I think we're probably going to kick this off earlier than 2027. I mean, that's also a little bit of wishful thinking because, you know, I'd like to retire before 2027 from the show.
Now, what do you think is going to happen in 2027? Would you say?
Well, no, that's what everyone, that's what the CIA guy, Bill from the chief, the CIA, said China will attack in 2027. Oh, yeah,
because of something China's wrote or something we deciphered, 2027 is a big deal.
Yeah.
Which is. Doesn't really match with anything else, but no, keeps cropping up.
Because this Ukraine thing has to end, and it seems like they're positioning the money. We know where the money's going to come. The money's already there. We just have to make it legal to take it, and then we can start. Then BlackRock and J.P. Morgan can start rebuilding, and Zelensky will, you know, do a big peace thing. We'll do it in Minsk, which sounds official. Putin himself won't show up because he will be convicted once he's no longer, because they'll say, well, you know, once he isn't elected president again, then he will be convicted and we'll throw him in the brink. So he'll be charged and convicted in absentia, and we'll just keep doing news reports about how the next election, that's going to be the one. That's when we go pick him up and he'll pay. I think they can sell this. I think they can sell it. I think Zelensky he's a great actor. You know, give him some lines. No problem.
Yeah, I got a line from Zelensky, this one. My one Zelensky clip.
Oh, hold on. Here we go.
There is no alternative to speed, because it is the speed that the life depends on.
The speed?
There's no alternatives to speed.
There was
when's this guy gonna get a voice coach?
I think this is actually better than it was. I think he's doing better. I had one too somewhere that someone sent me that I normally would not have played, except you played that. Listen to this.
Come in the name of peace.
Did you see that one? No, come no, in the name of peace. All right, there you go. That's some. Yeah, he's kind of entertaining. He's entertaining me. All right, I'm sweating now. What you got? You got a whole. You got like this whole row of things about NPR.
My stuff's all domestic.
Yeah, well, that's good. I'm tired of this foreign stuff.
I do have a couple, just an offbeat clip. I do have a clip that's called Adam and NTD Hate, where I can kind of understand why you hate NTD so much.
Okay, I'll play it.
Another train derailment, more hazardous materials, same company. A Norfolk Southern train carrying hazardous materials derailed outside of Detroit, Michigan yesterday morning. Six train cars crashed off the tracks in Van Buren Township just before 9 a.m. local time.
Now, why would I hate that?
Oh, so you also pronounce it Norfolk?
This is NTD.
I try to. Norfolk. It really doesn't bother me. Listen, we just listened to Zelensky say, come with piss. So I think Norfolk is acceptable in this case.
For people out there who want to know, it's pronounced Norfolk.
Norfolk. Yeah, I probably have the most stories about Norfolk.
Let's go to Mike then.
Yeah, okay. All right, what you got?
Okay, so there was this...
train wreck.
They can't get off Trump.
No, it's very hard.
And so the thing is that listening to NPR, I got two series of clips here, all from NPR. And NPR has become, first, once they lost Gwen Ifill, it became partisan.
Shit. Became shit.
She was the one helping.
We never thought we would miss Gwen Ifill that much. Rest in peace.
We didn't know.
No, we didn't.
But you could tell when that one important person leaves and that everything changes, you know that one person. That was the person that was keeping it together. It was Gwen Ifill.
Yes.
And then Judy came along. She's just like some sort of a lackey for the Democrats. But when she left, now it's worse.
Now you're talking about PBS or NPR?
PBS.
Oh, you said it. Okay. I thought you said NPR.
Did I say NPR? I made a mistake. I get them mixed up. But the fact that Gwen Ifill was never really with NPR. No, she's always PBS. And she was an old pro from the networks.
Yes. She was good. And
so was Judy, but Judy was...
The problem we had with Gwen Ifill, the reason why we turned on her stupidly was because, and I learned a new word, this is years and years and years ago, because she wrote a hagiography of Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And that was just, it was so wrong for her stature. But we should have just let that slide. We should have let that slide because now we miss her.
Well, then she became the host of a debate with Obama up there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Yeah.
So that was no good.
She was captured and it sucked.
But she still kept it going. And so now we've got, I think the group has pretty much turned progressive and gay.
And the difference is?
Well, it just makes it worse. They're more blatant. Their coverage is really so slanted. I want to play these clips. This is more or less about the Georgia coming back from their grand jury. And Trump was, mentioned, but, Trump didn't really do anything, but he could have.
Wait a minute. What are you talking about? Oh, the Georgia vote thing? What is this about?
Well, there was it was a number of factors, but this all gets back down to, Trump's claims about election fraud.
Okay.
Now, they use loaded language, and these clips are all very short because I have to stop them after the guy says three words. But let's go to the word Trump's claims and change it to Trump's false claims. And this has bugged me to no end for years now. What is a false claim? I'm asking you.
A false claim.
Let's say this. I'm going to make the claim that you dyed your hair black. Somebody told me that. And so I'm claiming your hair's dyed black.
Right. So you are claiming something that doesn't mean that you have proof. And I understand what you're saying. So a false claim would be if you said I dyed my hair black, but you actually thought it was blonde. That would be a false claim, but that would be inside your head. There is really no such thing as a false claim. It's a claim.
Yeah, that's what I think it's a claim, unless you're totally insincere.
Right.
In other words, if Trump's claiming, and by the way, this information that these clips mostly come out of the Dominion lawsuit against Fox News.
Ah, yes. This is the big one. Okay, got it.
So Dominion sues Fox News, and as we all know, if we know anything, that there's a thing called discovery.
Yep.
And that's why people try to avoid suits.
Yeah.
And so Dominion started digging and digging and digging, and they got a bunch of information that indicated that some people at Fox were insincere during this era, when during the election, the 2020 election, and they were saying one thing
to the viewers,
to the public.
Yes.
And they were lying. Lying.
Yeah, this is the Fox News takedown that we talked about on the last show. Tucker Carlson texting with Frau Ingraham and talking about Sidney Powell being a nut job.
Well, here's the report of this from NPR. I'm sorry, I did it. You got to excuse me for doing that, but from
PBS.
I got NPR on here too. It's all PBS.
Oh, okay. You were confusing me. Yes, it's all PBS. Got it.
That's why. Yeah, okay. It's all PBS. I don't have any NPR clips on today's show. So this is the way it starts, and here they're going to get into the suit, and they think they've got Fox over a barrel, and here we go.
A new court filing shows top executives at Fox News and leading network personalities privately dismissed former President Donald Trump's false claims of voter fraud in the days that followed the 2020 presidential election.
Yeah, here I see what you're pointing at. The false claims, just claims. You could just say claims.
Yeah, it's journalistically, I think, ethically,
wrong.
Everything is wrong.
It's like they should have said claimed without evidence.
That would be even better.
Yeah.
But false claims is loaded language designed to make Trump look like a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
But this clip, they start off with this, the premise. This is the whole premise, the whole thing. I want you to play this. This is a short clip. Play it one more time.
Oh, number one more time?
Yeah.
Okay.
A new court filing shows top executives at Fox News and leading network personalities privately dismissed former President Donald Trump's false claims of voter fraud in the days that followed the 2020 presidential election.
Which to me, because I heard all of this all week long on MSNBC, CNN, etc., was really them trying to take down Fox News, the clear winners in any ratings race by any observation.
Yeah.
Any measurement.
They do mention that in passing. So, okay, now we're going to, you just heard the premise.
Yep.
Throughout this report, I only have parts of it. The whole thing, they never bring out any evidence. And then they finally bring out two examples, and both these examples are bad. But let's go to, now this is clip number two of the series.
Even as they pushed those same lies on television.
Lies!
So now all of a sudden the false claim
is
a lie. Orange!
I like it.
So this is where they're headed. This is the kind of loaded report we're now getting from NewsHour.
Nice.
It's slanted as hell and is loaded with, and it's got loaded language. It's very poorly done. Let's go to number three. And this is actually not them talking. These are clips that supposedly exemplify this, but they don't exemplify the hypocrisy that they're claiming. They exemplify the kind of the narrative that they're pushing. And here's clips from Fox that they played.
Tonight, every American should be angry. You should be outraged. You should be worried. You should be concerned at what has happened in the election.
The Dominion software system has been tagged as one allegedly capable of flipping votes.
How, for example, did senile hermit Joe Biden get 15 million more votes than his former boss, rock star crowd surfer Barack Obama?
Rock star crowd surfer.
Now, yeah. that last clip, which was Tucker Carlson, was from Thursday of last week.
Yes, but we might as well use it now.
So it's got nothing to do with this case, which is about the election 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So why are they playing these clips now? That they continue to kind of push the same narrative, which, you know, they just, I don't know. It doesn't prove that Tucker was saying, well, Trump's full of shit. He never does that. They don't prove it throughout this entire report.
Well,
they're just asserting it.
Can I make an assertion of my own, which could be a false claim? Because you mentioned discovery. And what I picked up, not a clip, but I just picked up some reports that Dominion Discovery documents show employees of Dominion admitting their products are, quote, riddled with critical bugs that could lead to incorrect results. Maybe that has to be shut down a little bit.
By going in the other direction, you think?
Maybe it's just a thought.
Well, I sure didn't bring that point up in this report. Let's go to clip four.
The court filings reveal that behind the scenes, many of the network's top stars and executives derided Trump's election lies as, quote, mind-blowingly nuts and, quote, totally off the rails, even as they criticized colleagues for pointing that out on TV. The filing is part of an ongoing defamation lawsuit filed against the network by Dominion Voting Systems.
Okay.
What name names? I heard that. Quote, who are you quoting people?
Name the name.
Who said these things?
Surely they say that somewhere else, don't they? Or they have a lower third chyron that has
nope.
a no?
Nope. Nope. Oh. Nope and nope. Let's go to, I'm just waiting for the names. Where's the names? You give me, they finally bring some stuff out, but it's got nothing to do with what their assertion is. Let's go to clip six.
Joining us now is David Folkenflik.
Oh, I'm sorry, this is clip five. Is that the right one?
Yes, five. Okay. I'm sorry. Right.
Joining us now is David Folkenflik, who covers media for NPR. David, thanks for joining us.
Folkenflik.
And first, explain how we learned about these text messages, how they're part of this nearly $2 billion defamation lawsuit filed against Fox.
Right. It's a blockbuster case that's been filed by Dominion Voting Services Systems, an election tech company that is at the core of a lot of these fraudulent claims of fraud.
fraudulent claims of fraud.
So that actually means that it is fraud, because if it's a fraudulent claim of fraud, then it was not fraud, or it was fraud?
I don't know. I tell you, this is Folkenflik, whatever this guy's name is.
Folkenflik.
I looked him up.
I think that's German.
This guy has a hard-on from Rupert Murdoch like nobody. He shouldn't even be allowed to be on TV.
Folkenflik.
And I was thinking about this, because if you look at all his old works, he's just after Murdoch. He hates Murdoch. Hates him.
And who is this guy? What is his background?
He's just a kind of a hack journalist has been doing not a lot.
Listen to this. I'm reading the discovery. Yeah, I'll intersperse your report with a few brief things. Mark Beckstrand, this is from the discovery document. Mark Beckstrand, who probably has sex with Folkenflik, a Dominion sales manager, confirmed that other parties have gotten a hold of Dominion's equipment illicitly in the past and identified specific instances in Georgia and North Carolina and testified that a Dominion machine was hacked in Michigan. This is in the discovery. So it's not such a wonder that this is happening.
So these guys, the theory you have here is that this is a smokescreen for the real story, which it probably is.
Cover up, yeah.
But meanwhile, so this Folken guy, I was thinking about this because he just had, you can look at his old material, because it's on the net. And it's just hard on for Murdoch, like there's no tomorrow. And I have to assume, because I've seen this happen here and there. And I have examples of it from real life situations in the Bay Area with guys who tried to get a job someplace, got refused or kicked out or said no, and they get out. They're on the rampage against the company. And so they're just, so I think that's what's going on with this guy. So he's useless as a correspondent in this arena with his fraudulent claims of fraud.
Would this be,
so
would,
let's,
as a question. Do you think it's possible, fraudulent claims of fraud, do you think it's possible that really all they want is just one thing? They just want Tucker Carlson off the air?
I think that's a big part
of it. That's got to be. And Sean Hannity is basically he's harmless. Frau Ingraham is the same. They're
well, they go after both of them.
I know, but they're the entertainment next two, products. They're entertainment
the next
products.
Two clips are, they go after Tucker, and this is the example they cite. This is a read of some memo. They cite of Tucker showing that he's a phony.
Whoa.
And I don't see it. I want you to listen to this and tell me what makes you think he's a phony. This is clip 7.
No, clip 6.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm off.
We have Folkenflik one more time. It's a short one.
Okay, let's go back with Folkenflik.
Fraudulent claims of fraud that were ventilated on Fox News in the immediate aftermath of the November 2020 elections.
Okay, I kept that in because the use of the word ventilated.
Ooh, I kind of like that.
Fraudulent claims of fraud that were ventilated.
Let's hear that one more
now,
time.
I think he meant vented.
But I like the whole sequence.
Fraudulent claims of fraud that were ventilated on Fox News in the immediate aftermath.
This is what you should try with your wife. You know, you're just ventilating fraudulent claims of fraud. And see how that works. See how your marriage works out.
Okay, all these clips are just to point out the bad journalism that you have to, that you're getting from the nation's one of the nation's treasures.
Yeah,
news hour.
Treasures. Yeah,
it's really out of control. But let's go now. Here's their example about Tucker.
Brutal portrait that we have seen about the cynicism, the sense of crisis, the fear and the anger that was generated inside of Fox in reaction to their audiences recoiling from the network's own call of Arizona for Joe Biden on election night, the first of any major network to do so.
What becomes clear from reading through this filing is that Fox knowingly peddled election lies for ratings. There's a text in particular from Tucker Carlson, right. And he is suggesting here that a Fox News White House correspondent should be fired for fact-checking a Trump claim about the election. He says, please get her fired. I'm actually shocked. It needs to be stopped immediately, like tonight. It's measurably hurting the company. The stock price is down. Not a joke.
Not a joke. What? He's using Biden stuff now.
So there was some woman on the staff that was doing the typical Washington Post style fact checking. Mm-hmm. Oh, he said 6 and it was actually 7.
Fact check false.
And so she was doing this, and so Tucker said she not a good look, but he said she's
a very bad look. What does he have options?
But what's it got to do with the original premise that
nothing.
The claim that Tucker was saying the election was fraudulent, but behind everyone's back, he was saying, no, Trump's nuts. It's not fraudulent at all. How does that example prove that point?
It doesn't at all. The only one I heard is probably the next clip that you have. That's the only text message.
This next one's in actually, I think they actually, well, no, that's another text message. This is about Hannity now.
Oh, I thought this was Powell.
It's about Hannity and Powell.
Oh, okay.
And this is another one of their examples. And again, I'm not seeing it. Play this and you tell me how you're interpreting this, because Trump's not even in the conversation.
As Sean Hannity, even as he was giving her airtime, he later said in a deposition, quote, the whole narrative that Sidney Powell was pushing, I did not believe it for 1 second.
No,
oh, no. I listened to Sidney Powell. I didn't believe anything she said either. I also didn't believe Steve Pachenik's nonsense about the military taking over or anybody else. I thought the election was sketchy for other reasons, like, you know, people not getting to go check on things, the ballots disappearing, ballot harvesting and things like that. So what they're trying to imply here is that you have to be all in on everything. So if you question Sidney Powell, you're a hypocrite.
Yes, that's what they did with Tucker. Tucker had a text back in exchange with Frau Ingraham. Frau Ingraham says, you know, Powell's full of shit. And then Tucker says, yeah, she's totally full of shit. What was it? And we need to not be putting her on the air because, you know, our viewers believe us. I mean, it seems like Tucker is really, he's very concerned for the organization now that, you know, we have that talking about the stock price being down. That is actually more telling about Tucker than I didn't expect that he would be so concerned such about the company. Fulcan Flick is the author of Murdoch's World, The Last of the Old Media Empires. Yeah. So he wrote the book. He wrote the...
Oh, yeah. He's just a... So he's no good. That this whole report was bad. So the NewsHour show keeps going on, and they bring on late in the show Brooks and Capehart.
Oh no!
These two guys again, you know.
Yeah.
So they bring them on, and they revisit the topic.
It's time for the analysis of Brooks and Capehart. That's New York Times columnist David Brooks and Jonathan Capehart, associate editor for the Washington Post. With a welcome to you both, let's start with this revelation late last night in this court filing in Dominion Voting Systems lawsuit against Fox News.
Yes, let's.
Showing that Fox executives and hosts didn't believe the election lies that they were peddling on television. David, what do you make of this notion that Fox determined that telling the truth and being straight with its vote, with its viewers, was not good for its bottom line?
Yeah, I don't know whether to feel relieved or not that Tucker didn't really believe what he was saying. Like, maybe he has some core in there that's actually honest.
What? I don't understand.
Yeah, that's a what? He goes on and picks up the cudgel and goes on with this thing that Tucker was insincere.
About the company?
No, about the election fraud.
You know, all of us, I mean, here in sainted PBS, we don't go after profits, but at the New York Times and most other news organizations, we have two missions. We want to tell the truth. We want to live up to the ethics of our profession. We also want to attract readers and serve our viewers and make money for our company. And, you know, dealing with that tension is not unique. Doctors do it. Lawyers do it. And so you find a balance. And you try to hew to the code of your profession and do it the best you can and hope that readers will appreciate that. At Fox, that's apparently not how it works.
Can you believe these guys?
I love it. I want to have a drink with them. This is great.
And by the way, well, this will be the last one. I have a comment about their great ethics over there.
And that the ethos of following the code of honesty, of reporting, of telling the truth, which is our only job. Our only job is just to tell the truth and not be partisan. That's our job. And if you can't do the basics of the job, then pretty soon you lose all moral bearing. And I think not everybody at that agency, a lot of people really left. But a lot of people who used to be friends of mine, they lost all moral bearing and shows.
And John,
wow, that sounds like your friends, the Libjos. Yeah. The Libjos, yeah, that's exactly what you would say.
But a lot of people who used to be friends of mine, they lost all bearing and shows.
And Jonathan, this in many ways reaffirms what critics of Fox News have believed all along, that even though it has news in the title, that is a thin veneer at best.
Yeah, very thin. It's more like carpaccio, if you want to give a culinary analogy. Look, what this Dominion paper, the filing shows is that the big lie is indeed a big lie, and that the people who were perpetuating it knew it was a lie, and yet they still went on air night after night after night, perpetuating it to the detriment of our country. And yeah, they lost their balance. They lost their moral core, if any of them had any.
Oh, if any of them had any. They're a bunch of creeps. This is the most dishonest reporting you could possibly have. Bigoted, biased, name-calling. And meanwhile, well, going on and on about this when they're so great. Did they even discuss during the Capehart and Brooks segment the fact that the Kavanaugh accusers, two of them so far, have reneged on their accusations about rape and all the rest of it?
I don't recall that.
No, of course not. Nobody's covering it. But the Kavanaugh accusers are now being referred to the Justice Department by Grassley for perjury. And this is a repressed story. Look it up. Google it.
INEVA stuff.
So this, I just found it the worst kind of reporting, biased and bigoted, dishonest, and that's what PBS has become. fraudulent claims against fraud.
Yeah. Are you surprised, disappointed?
No, I just like to get worked up.
Well, that's successful. Here's the actual text that I was referring to. Tucker Carlson text. Sidney Powell is lying, by the way. I caught her. It's insane. Laura Ingraham. Sidney is a complete nut. No one will work with her. Ditto with Rudy. And Tucker. It's unbelievably offensive to me. Our viewers are good people, and they believe it. What a horrible thing to say as a television journalist. horrible to protect the good people who are the viewers. Tucker's a real company, man. That surprises me. He must, I mean, I wonder if a lot of his compensation is based on options now. And now I have to think about that.
That could be. That would be a good way to pay him.
You can read the 183 pages of the filing. There's a lot of, you remember Eric Coomer, director of product strategy, just a couple weeks before the election. He acknowledged that, quote, our shit is just riddled with bugs. Our products suck. That almost all of Dominion's technological failings were due to our complete effing up the installation. He identified critical bug leading to incorrect results. I mean, it's a cover up. This is exactly the way, and I guess I'm going to have to bring some clips now, of how all media, except maybe Tucker or some Fox reporting, but basically they all suck, of the Twitter files. You know, all you hear on, and you should probably look at PBS and NPR as well. Oh, it's just the conspiracy theories. It's saying the FBI was running Twitter. That's crazy talk. And they just play a couple of clips of Tucker. You know, they don't actually show you any of the documents that are coming out. And the problem is, it's not even the media anymore. It's the medium. I think podcasting is the only place you can get.
I was wondering how to do that. That was good.
Did you like that one?
It was funny. Sorry, it was just out of the... if we're going to bitch and moan about people, I do have a couple more clips I want to play.
I'm glad you do.
Don Lemon.
I have thoughts about Don Lemon. Can I just give you my thoughts off the bat, and then you got... I have no clips, but I think Don Lemon is a genius. Don Lemon has taken this... He knows that he has a job to do. He knows that he failed in his prime time slot. More or less prime time. He knows that he's on his last leg. Now, I know that you're thinking, according to the newsletter, is that, you know, this is brilliant. The new boss at CNN is trying to get him out. I think Don Lemon has grabbed this and has said, you know what? I'm going to get everybody watching, because that's the result of this. With everything he says, more people are going to watch. This is how you run a cable news show. You need to have controversy so people show up. And I think he's doing the right thing here.
Well, you know, that would make a lot of sense if he showed up after the fact and he just went on vacation, so he's not going to be there. But so that kind of blows that theory up. Well, do you have the bonus clips?
Oh, I'm sorry. You didn't alert me to any bonus clips.
I forgot to alert you earlier, but you usually always have them, so I never do that.
Bonus clip activity. Hold on. No, you always say, did you get the bonus clips?
I know. I always say it, and you always say, yep, I got them. What do you think?
That's right. I decided to.
So that's what you call a typical double fail, where you the one time I don't ask is the one time you don't do it, which makes me wonder if you ever do it.
No, but what's really cool is that you and I know how this works, so you gave me enough time there to rack them up, and I'm good to go. All I need to do is just tell me which bonus clip you want, because I have them right here.
So I have two Don Lemon clips. One of them, what are they labeled? Because I don't have them in front of me.
B-Don. I got B-Don. B-Don Lemon Blunder. B. Meyer on CNN. B. Mooch Cuomo. B. Mooch Opener.
Okay, B. Don Lemon, whatever it was.
This whole talk about age makes me uncomfortable.
Okay, hold on a second. Wait, let's stop. I do have to set it up.
You do.
So on the morning show, this came after Nikki Haley.
Yes.
Jokingly said, "Hey, I don't understand why they don't give everybody a cognitive test after these, you know, he took his physical and he passed it in flying colors, but he never took a cognitive test, even though funny. The same Democrats are the ones moaning and groaning about Trump getting one. He did get one. But Biden hasn't gotten one.
Hey, you are like listening to Twitter. This is great. All right. Yes. Oh, gee. Or you should try Tim Pool. This is exactly what
you want me to finish this or no? You're just going to go no, on.
I
want
to antagonize you to get more out of you. This is great.
So so she brought this up. And so this rubbed Don Lemon the wrong way because Don Lemon's a Democrat. And he's pushing, you know, for Biden to get reelected. And he didn't think this was much of this idea, you know. And then he called out Nikki Haley and hilarity ensued.
This whole talk about AIDS makes me uncomfortable. I think it's the wrong road to go down. She says people, you know, politicians or something are not in their prime. Nikki Haley isn't in her prime. Sorry. When a woman is considered to be in her prime in her 20s and 30s and maybe 40s.
What are you talking about?
That's not according to me.
Prime for what?
It depends. I mean, it's just like prime. If you look it up, if you Google when is a woman in her prime, it'll say 20s, 30s, and 40s. I don't necessarily.
40s. Oh, I got another.
I'm not saying
decade.
I agree with that. So I think she has to be careful about saying that. You know, politicians aren't in their prime.
You need to qualify. Are you talking about prime for like childbearing, or are you talking
don't shoot
about
the message
prime
I'm just
for
saying
president.
What the facts are? Google it, everybody at home. When is a woman in her prime? It says 20s, 30s, and 40s. And I'm just saying Nikki Haley should be careful about saying that politicians are not in their prime, and they need to be in their prime when they serve, because she wouldn't be in her prime according to
Google,
you know, Google or whatever it is.
Now, I'm just going to counter you. I think you should be a little more pragmatic about this. It's not because he's a Democrat, it's because he's gay. He hates women. He's surrounded by beautiful women. He's the kind of gay guy that hates women.
I agree with that. I could have brought that up, but I didn't.
Because a lot of gay guys
still,
love women.
He's still a big Biden man, and yes, he hates women, and there are a lot of gay men who hate women. There's a lot of gay women who hate men.
Yes.
And so that's why I thought it was genius to put him in that show.
I still
with
think
two,
it's genius.
Two carping women who would just go after anything he says because I don't think they like gay men.
No, I'm in agreement with you. I think they're doing their job, but somehow it's I'm looking at the ratings. It really isn't catching on, but it should. The formula of gay guy hates women, two women who hate gay guys.
I agree.
Winning formula, but somehow they're not able to execute. So that just comes down to CNN management. Don Lemon's doing his job as far as I'm concerned.
By being a dick.
Yes.
So he took off and now he's in Miami. So he's not coming back.
He's in a red state. Are you kidding me? He went to Miami.
Well, he's in some.
Where you can't say gay.
That's where he went. That's all I can say.
Oh, see, he's a hypocrite.
And so. So anyway, but then the joke of it, this is not a great clip, but this is the clip from the Mara show where one of the women on there on this. This is the show that played on CNN, you know, Mara immediately.
This is that drew 90,000 viewers.
Yeah, all of.
We literally have 10 times that amount listening to this blather we're doing right now. That's the best part.
So Mara goes on, he gets money. He's getting more money for this 90,000 viewers than we are for our 90,000.
I hope he didn't take stock.
So he goes on CNN, and you know, this is the after show that he used to give away for free on the online. Now it's on CNN after his Friday show. He does his Friday show, and they do an after show, and you can watch that if you want, and nobody did. And so CNN, looking for material, said, "Hey, Bill, give us that show, and we'll just put it on the air, and here's some money."
Nikki Haley
And anyway, so he puts this on here. And so has to have mixed feelings about the woman that's on there kind of kvetching about CNN itself.
Nikki Haley has called for politicians over 75 years old to be required to take a mental health competency test. I wonder who that's aimed at. both of them, right?
I think it's both. I think she's trolling. It allows her to draw attention to Biden. She's in a Republican primary, but it's a subtle hit on Trump. They're both older politicians. They have every right to run. The competency test is a really long campaign, and people will assess how they seem.
But shouldn't we do that for everybody? Why just over 75? Because, over here, Mike.
like 35-year-old House of Representatives.
Right. Well, I mean, there's only one age requirement. The Constitution has a minimum age, and that was because they were so worried about people passing things on to their famous sons at the time. There's no maximum age, but we have that for pilots and other things. But again, I think it's hard. If you've covered these things, you know how it is. It's hard to run for president. We're going to see how they do. And then you're going to decide at the debates and other forums whether they seem like they got it.
Well, and as Don Lemon told us on CNN, women actually can't run for president because he said we're past our prime once we get to our 40s. But since you have to be 35 to run, it's like this really tight window between 35 and 40.
Now, tell me this show doesn't have music under it.
I'm hoping it doesn't. I picked that off of somebody who clipped it. And
I refuse to play that if there's music under it.
Well, I couldn't find. I'm not going to go to CNN and dig through the archives to find it. So I took the clip. I ripped the clip off.
So there's something that goes along with this particular story about the cognition of our politicians. And of course, you know, we ha ha ha, it's Haley, ha ha ha, it's Orange Man Bad. But here's the real story.
Also at Walter Reed today, President Biden, who was there for his annual checkup, a matter of high interest as the president, who is now 80 years old, is expected to run again. ABC's Stephanie Ramos at the White House for us. And Stephanie, what are we learning from the president's doctor tonight?
Well, with that 5-page detailed health report released right before our show, overall, President Biden getting a clean bill of health today. He spent 3 hours at Walter Reed undergoing many tests. In that health report, the president's doctor says Biden continues to be treated for 4 different conditions, a type of irregular heart rhythm, higher concentrations of fats or lipids in the blood, also known as high cholesterol, gastroesophageal reflux, and seasonal allergies. The summary says Biden did not experience any long COVID following his bout with the virus in July of 2022. His doctor also says that Biden is fit to successfully execute the duties of the presidency.
Well, where's the brain analysis?
Well, they also left something out that everybody else kind of brought up, which he has an awkward gait.
Yeah.
And the doctor brought it up, and I was thinking about this because this goes back to our show's been on for a long time.
Yeah.
And we used to do a segment about Biden called, and we have a jingle for it, called Drunk or Not Drunk.
I don't think that's true. Did that start with Biden?
Yes.
I don't. And lady, where's the jingle? Oh, here it is. Yes, we do. Are you sure?
Drunk or not drunk.
Was that about Biden?
I'm pretty sure it was about Biden. I'm not pretty sure. I'm convinced it's about Biden because we had a lot of Biden clips because he was always slurring and
could be.
His energy was off. And we'd play a clip of Biden and then it would be drunk or not drunk. And
but we have him for Nadler, for Kamala. We do have him for George Bush.
Yeah, Bush is always sounding drunk too. But there was a lot of Biden clips, and Biden goes way back with having this kind of high, you know, energy and then having this drunk sound. I think he was an alcoholic. And I think that's where that gait comes from. Because I have seen that gait a number of times from out and out drunks that lived in the neighborhoods I've been in.
I think he's just old and senile. I mean, why throw it on the drunk thing? He's just old and senile.
I'm just saying, you get a gait like that. He's old and senile, okay.
He is now, old and senile.
While I'm on the domestic beat, condemning things.
Yes. Yeah.
So
ageist.
Anthony Scaramucci has a podcast now.
Yeah. Really? You're really digging at the bottom of the barrel when you're going to Anthony Scaramucci's podcast.
And I think I may have had some influence on it because he did one of his first podcasts technically with me.
Well, he's also friends with Horowitz.
Yeah. Oh, they are. Yeah. Yes, they are friends because of the investment angle, but he's also super good friends
Trump
with Cuomo.
With Cuomo, he's a,
and
he's
so
a
he
fair
had Cuomo on
friend.
His podcast, and this is because I wanted to get this clip since we're bashing Don Lemon of Cuomo saying that when he got fired from CNN he wanted to kill everyone and then kill himself.
The good time is going to go
wait.
You're giving me cues.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but so the thing is, I got two clips here. First, I've got the opening clip of his show, which got nothing to do with Cuomo. I just want to point out to you, it's out of phase.
Ugh.
Now, not everybody knows what that means, but you do. I do.
Yes. It sounds like you're talking through your butthole.
It's out of phase, and you get that. You can get out of phase using stereo mics. There's a lot of different ways you can achieve this sound, but it's not wanted.
It's not the idea.
It's not the idea. And his the thing is, it's local. He's out of phase, and his guests aren't necessarily, which makes it even more rinky-dink.
Goodness.
But I want to play the beginning of him so you can hear what I'm talking about with the out of phase situation with the recording.
So music is good.
I am Anthony Scaramucci, and welcome to Open Book, where I talk with some of the most interesting and brilliant minds in our world today. In this show, I'll bring on guests in business, politics, entertainment, and more to go deep into a piece of their work, whether it's a highly anticipated book, an in-depth feature story, or an opinion piece that has captured my attention. We'll dig into why it matters to you and how their work is shaping our future.
Yeah. How about a little detail on your investment with FTX there, Mooch? That was a winner.
Oh, he also pops his peas.
What kind of mic does it? It may be the mic. Maybe using a weird mic that he's.
No, your mics don't usually contribute to our face.
Yeah, people have like these. You get these USB mics that people run through a mixer. That could be.
There's a lot of possibilities. Yeah. Whatever the case is, he hasn't got a pop filter, and he's popping his peas and he's awkward. He doesn't feel comfortable. You can tell he doesn't like doing this. I don't know why he's doing it, but he did have Cuomo on, and Cuomo here, and it's not as spectacular as I'd hoped. But Cuomo does say he wanted to shoot everybody at CNN and then kill himself after he got fired. And by the way, if people want to hear a self-absorbed person being interviewed, go find the Scaramucci podcast and listen to Cuomo. Just talks about himself excessively, and it's like he's just really must be insufferable in person, but. This is the part, it's not as great as I'd hoped, but he did. I'm thinking now he's working for this other operation, News Reality or News, whatever it's
newsletter,
called.
Newsletter.
News. And he, I would say I would be really skeptical about being a producer for him if this is what he thinks. But here it is for people who want to know.
Half of his producers were child fiddlers.
Yeah, there's that. Okay.
The good time is going to go away. The bad time is also going to go away. Time is immutable, no question.
Holy crap, everything's out of phase. This whole thing is out of phase.
Right. But it's a fact. It's very subjective. Right. Just because a long time goes away doesn't mean you got to be doing the right things. You got to make things happen. There is no luck. There's no fate. There is no destiny. What happens is what you make happen and how you deal with what is made to happen to you, for better and worse. And, you know, I make a lot of mistakes, sometimes for good reason, sometimes for bad reason. I'm very flawed. There's damage. There's damage that's relatable to people. There's damage that's unrelatable to people that I have to deal with, that I try to deal with, that I do the work on. I still fail. And I have learned to accept it. I had to accept because I was going to kill everybody, including myself. Things can consume you. Italians are so passionate. And I really had to fight against that because, you know, just like you did, I got too many people counting on me.
I got so many people counting on me. Does he have a book out about him wanting to kill him? That's probably, this is a setup. Either it's out or he's getting ready for it. He's promoting a book about I wanted to kill everybody. Wanted to kill myself. It's all about me. Look at me. Cause Italians are passionate. Screw this guy.
You're close, but believe me, you're close. But the thing is, he had a book deal that was killed after he was fired, and he's suing the publisher. So there's got no book coming out. And you start suing publishers, you're going to be...
Oh, yeah.
You're never going to get a book deal.
That's like saying, I was discriminated against as a woman. I didn't get a raise. That's right. You're never working in television again, Natalie Morris.
Well, I think the better one is Kat Sadler down at E! News.
All right. Back to gay. Because you tell me, since you're the expert, is this a man or a woman speaking?
One example would be the quote unquote don't say gay law in Florida. You know, studies show that one supportive adult.
Man or woman?
Man.
And what is the man's name?
Karen?
No, Rachel.
That's Rachel?
That's Rachel Levine.
Oh, it sounds like a man.
Well, looks like a woman.
One supportive adult for an LGBT.
Actually, this is a pretty interesting clip. I've carried this over for a few shows. This is what Rachel Levine had to say, and it's about Florida. This is why I play it. The don't say gay law. But just listen to what she. I think it used to be Richard. I'm just going to dead name because this. I don't even believe that Rachel Levine is trans because he believes he's trans. I just. It's hard for me to believe that. Seems like a gag. Kind of like the guy,
like the shop teacher.
Yeah, with the big boobs. Exactly. Feels like a gag.
One example would be the quote unquote don't say gay law in Florida. You know, studies show that one supportive adult for an LGBTQI plus kid can make all the difference in terms of preventing suicide, in terms of them being able to navigate the world and to adulthood and leading a happy, successful, productive life. One supportive adult. I'd love if that was always the parent, but it's not always a parent. Frequently, it's a teacher. Or a guidance counselor or some other coach or another school personnel. This law forbids kids essentially from talking to these people. And also it means that if you tell a teacher, the teacher has to tell the parent. And so it really is a gag rule. It's a gag law to prevent kids from accessing supportive adults.
So really, it's better if just one. You only need one supportive adult. This is, I think if a teacher, whatever your child is going through, a teacher should talk to the parents about it. Shouldn't be just, and especially not if teachers just have the capability to then say, oh, let's go talk to this doctor over here. Anyway, that's your assistant secretary of Health and Human Services. So now let's listen to DeSantos. As you would say, Ronnie, I do not like the directions he's headed. This sounds like a good idea, but I don't like it.
So what is the Digital Bill of Rights? Well, we want to protect your right as a Floridian to have private in-person conversations without big tech surveilling you. If you want to consent to let them have this information so they can fashion advertising based off of it, it's your right to consent to do so. But it should only be if you consent and they don't have a right to have that information as a matter of first principle. We also are going to protect the right to participate in online platforms without unfair censorship. We want free speech. We want more speech, not less speech. We want to protect the right to know how these internet search engines are manipulating search results. Transparency in terms of what we're doing so that you can evaluate whether that's a search engine that you want to use or maybe you want to take your business elsewhere. We want to protect your right to control all your personal data on the largest and most common platforms. They take that personal data and they make a fortune off your personal data. So you're talking about Google, Facebook, just a handful of these companies. They should really get express authorization from you before they're able to monetize that or use it in any way. And then finally, Digital Bill of Rights aims to protect children from various online harms. And as we see, that's a huge issue.
Somebody think of the children. There should be no legislation. This digital, especially call it the Digital Bill of Rights. No, these are all rights we have. Instead of, because what they want, what DeSantis wants is he wants control. He wants to control the internet. This is why they all, that's net neutrality is the same thing. I mean, this does, will not end well. You don't really want this. You want education. You want to tell people here's all the crap that's going down. Here's the systems and here's the companies that do it. Here's what they do. Just educate people continuously. That's what they need. Government's going to save me. Government's going to protect me. That has never worked out. I'm hoping you would agree with me on this.
Well, just to take the other side of it, because you do that to me now every day.
Well, you deserve it.
I would say it's just blather. It's just he's just talking out of his ass because none of this is going to happen one way or the other.
Oh, okay. Meaning, well, that's
digital bill.
That's just
net neutrality. It's just bullshit.
That's just as good. I'll take that. Look, okay, I want to move to climate change because there's stuff happening. Oh, God, no. Yes, yes, there's good stuff happening in climate change.
The war on meat.
Yeah, baby! The war on meat! Let's make meat look bad!
We also learned today that a Wisconsin company paid more than $1.5 million in fines for violating child labor laws. The Labor Department says Packer Sanitation Services had more than 100 children, some as young as 13, working at more than a dozen meat processing plants in 8 states.
Now, when I was 13, I had jobs like that, not meat packing, but
I wouldn't think so.
No, but I did work for a farm. I worked for a butcher. I did some stuff. I didn't actually pack the meat, but I was around. I mean, are you not allowed to have a job when you're 13? Like a Saturday job?
I had jobs when I was 13.
I had jobs when
I was a paper boy.
Yeah, same with me. Is that not allowed anymore?
I think it is, but I think when I was a kid and I wanted to work in a factory and I was in, which is, you know, in high school, for example, you had to get a work permit.
Oh, okay. I've never gotten that.
And so I got a work permit to work a full-time job during the summer. Hmm. And, I think you had to be 14 to get the work permit, or 15 to 14, probably.
Yeah.
And you get these. It was just a rubber stamp thing. Yeah, it wasn't a big exactly. Deal.
Meanwhile, buy Nike. There's no children involved in gluing that together. All right.
Well, that's a good point. This is kind of a hypocritical report.
Let's go down to the electric vehicles. There's a hit out on EVs. This has to happen because we're moving to clean hydrogen, which just will not work. 56,000 hydrogen vehicles already on the road in America. So they say. Here's Bloomberg kind of setting the narrative. This is their podcast, by the way. Setting the narrative with this guy, Stephen Schork, about just how bad electric vehicles are for the environment. This obviously revolves around the battery.
You said a line there. I think it was EVs are certainly not that environmentally friendly.
Of course.
Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, I mean, just look what's happening in California right now. We're at the first life cycle ending of those solar panels. California never had a plan to dispose of those solar panels. So now all the heavy metal, those solar panels are sitting in dumps with the potential of all the heavy metals in there leaking out into the environment. And now when you factor in the fact that EVs are such a small percentage of the global market, when we talk about the amount of earth, and we're talking about something about the size of the state of Arizona and Nevada, just here in the United States, to state our demand, the amount of earth you're going to have to rip up to get to these heavy metals. So that's, we're ripping up China. We're going to rip up the Congo, which we already are. We're going to rip up Argentina to get to the cobalt there. When we have to rip up that earth, it will make 120, 130 years of coal mining and oil drilling look like a pinprick of the amount of environmental degradation we're going to have to do to get those virtual signaling heavy metals into that EV battery.
Stephen, why aren't we having that conversation more?
I don't know. I mean, it's, well, you know, because we're such a fractured political nation. If I'm saying something, 49-50% of the people watching this think I'm nuts and think I'm I'm pushing some sort of agenda. I'm just looking for a meeting of the minds, and I want to really promote my hybrid. It's the best of both worlds. It's a little bit of fossil fuel, which we need, because demand's not going away there, and it's a little bit of electricity. It's a little bit of both. And it's a great compromise.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, the war is on, and this is my favorite one. Oh, Tesla recall.
Tesla is voluntarily recalling more than 360,000 vehicles, warning that its experimental driver assistance software may cause crashes. Federal investigators say Tesla's full self-driving beta software can send cars straight through intersections where there's a turn-only lane, fail to come to a full stop at stop signs, or blow through yellow lights. Woo! Tesla says it will update the software in the impacted vehicle.
So the choice here for the term recall is very interesting for CBS.
This is very controversial. NPR locally, I didn't have the clip, but I was going to get it. It just seemed a little long and boring. But they made a big fuss. Tesla made the fuss. It was Musk. He said, why? We're not, nobody has to drive their car in. This is an over-the-air software fix. Why do you insist on calling it a recall? And NPR persisted on calling it a recall as though they were in on it.
Here's ABC.
CEO Elon Musk is taking issue with the word recall, saying using that word for an over-the-air software update is just plain wrong.
Yeah, but he's on the losing end. He's on the losing
meanwhile, end. Meanwhile, I do a clip for this series, Tesla crash.
Person is dead after a Tesla slammed into a fire truck in the East Bay. Happened this morning on northbound 680. Firefighters say the Tesla hit a truck that was blocking a different crash. A driver died at the scene. Passenger and four firefighters were taken to the hospital. They have all since been released.
Yeah. I love the Super Bowl commercials. Those people who hate Tesla. Wasn't that? Yeah, that was Tesla, right? They're out to get him. They're out to EVs.
Well, ever since Musk said vote Republican,
ever since
this began.
Ever since the Twitter files. Of course. Yeah. Maybe he's not that smart. Oh, what? Did I just say
or
that?
Maybe this is a part of a bigger play.
No. He's just not impressive. I've met him. He's not impressive. He didn't start these companies. He was put in there by Sequoia Capital. Roelof Botha is the CEO, another South African. It's a cabal. And, you know, and his hair is fake news. I hate to do it, but it's just like, you know, he was really, really unattractive and balding. And now he's just not balding and unattractive. And it just doesn't seem smart. He just talks interestingly. All right. The View had a scoop. She didn't come to see them, of course, because she no longer flies. But I guess Greta is back on the scene.
Woo! In the last 5 years, Greta Thunberg has gone from a solo student activist to an international icon in the movement to combat climate change. Now she and more than 100 experts are sounding yet another global warning on the crisis in the climate book, which is right here. Joining us from Sweden, please welcome Greta Thunberg. So Greta, thank you for coming on the show. Congratulations on the book. We should point out that it's been 60 degrees here in New York this week in mid-February. Just saying.
Didn't we have an Arctic bomb? Just saying, weather's not climate.
I wonder, how would you describe where we stand today in terms of the climate crisis? Are we better or worse off than when you began striking 5 years ago?
Now, what would the answer be to this question? In your
worse off, of course.
Is that really all your full answer? Is that the only, if you're Greta, that's all you would say? We're just worse off?
No? How dare you? I'd say that.
How very dare you?
It depends on how you see it. If you see it from one perspective, the concentration, the level of CO2 in the atmosphere is higher now than it was before. And we are seeing more and more natural disasters. More people are displaced. More people are losing their lives and livelihoods due to the consequences of the climate crisis. So in that...
Who's losing a job over the consequence of the climate crisis?
Ukrainians
are displaced. More people are losing their lives and livelihoods due to the consequences of the climate crisis. So in that sense, we are far worse off than we were before. But also we can see that more and more people are starting to stand up and speak out about these issues, and more people are mobilizing. So, but it's going way, way too slow. So I would say we're both better off and much worse off.
It's better and worse. Wrong. My question would be, what do you think of those stickers on gas tanks and gas stations of you? What do you think? My question. No, we can't do that. We have to bring in some culture.
And Greta, speaking of...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, if I was going to ask her stuff, I'd ask her if she's okay with all these private jets that fly into these climate meetups.
Well, she doesn't fly anymore, you see. She doesn't fly anymore.
No, but is she okay with everybody else flying in on the private jets?
Did I play the Bill Gates answer to that question? I don't think
Jeffrey Epstein is dead?
No, No, about the private. Yeah, the BBC asked Gates that very question.
What do you say to the charge that if you are a climate change campaigner, but you also travel around the world on a private jet, you're a hypocrite?
Well, I by the gold standard of funding Climeworks to do direct air capture that far exceeds my family's carbon footprint. And I spend billions of dollars on climate innovation.
I'm so good.
So, you know, should I stay at home and not come to Kenya and learn about farming and malaria? Anyway, I mean, I'm comfortable with the idea that not only am I not part of the problem by paying for the offsets, but also through the billions that my Breakthrough Energy Group is spending, that I'm part of the solution.
I'm good. I'm virtuous. I spend
There should be a follow-up question. I could have been the one to ask it, even though everyone else should have asked it. Bill, you used to refuse to fly in private jets and only go commercial.
That's right.
In fact, you'd fly economy.
Coach, and he'd fly coach. That's right. I remember that.
He always flew coach. In fact, and the thing, of course, the gimmick there was he flew coach, but he always got upgraded by the airline because he was so rich. So they always move him into first class. And I ran into him once on a flight, and I went in first class where he was and chatted with him for a bit. And I went back to coach afterwards.
Where you belong.
Where I belong, steerage. And so he used to always do that. He refused to get a private jet until he married Melinda's, the one who got him to buy a jet.
No, I think once he was on that Epstein Lolita Express, he's like, this is the shit.
I think that
that's what happened.
Yeah. I think he got on the Epstein plane after he got married.
I'm going to skip the Greta because it's just not interesting, because now that Africa is, I just need to play a couple of Africa clips because Africa is so on deck. Now we are going to, not that we haven't been already, but the EU, China, United States, Russia, all positioning to rape Africa. But we got to change a few things first. Here's Antonio Guterres, who is the Secretary General of the United Nations.
After the opening of the African Union summit, the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, said that the African countries are being denied much needed debt relief. He sought reforms to the structures of international finance to better serve the needs of developing countries.
Investing in Africa pathways to prosperity requires finance, and developing countries are repeatedly left in the lurch. The global financial system routinely denies them debt relief and concessional financing while charging extortionate interest rates. As a result, vital systems are starved of investment, from health and education to green technology, social protection, and the creation of new sustainable jobs.
Now, this is the thing we keep hearing, is that we need to change international finance. This is not being done the right way. We've heard we need to change the leadership at the World Bank because we need everyone to come together and finance Africa for climate change. And they got their wish.
Time for Business. Kate Moody joins us, started with the news that the president of the World Bank is stepping down early.
Early.
David Malpass will be leaving his post by the end of this June. That's about a year before his 5-year term would have expired. The reasons for his departure were not made clear.
And probably to spend more time with his family.
Malpass was appointed by the former U.S. President Donald Trump in 2019. He's overseen the distribution of aid to developing countries, as well as war-torn Ukraine, and just last week, an initial $1.8 billion for Turkey. He has, though, courted controversy. Last year, he declined to say whether he believed human activity contributed to climate change. He later said he had been misunderstood. The World Bank has made the green transition and fighting climate change a key pillar of its mandate.
Yeah, okay. So there you go. We got rid of the problem guy. We can now put everyone's money to work. And we now have a clear signal. Whenever war is coming to a country, you first get this report.
The satellite-based internet, soon to be provided by billionaire Elon Musk's high-speed satellite internet venture, is expected to give students and teachers in Rwanda access to educational resources and digital tools. The program is expected to begin this February.
Yeah. Whenever Elon Musk deploys Starlink to a country, war is coming. because that's the sales job. Once you have it deployed, then you just flip the switch and sell it to the military under, what's it called? Defense Link or whatever.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, same thing. Only 100 times as expensive. So Africa, you know, for and luckily Dave Ackerman is scouring Africa news every single day. That because that's the only news we'll get about it, except that everyone has been to different African countries. The Russians, the Chinese, we have the Brits. Everyone's going to Africa, getting it all.
I think they're divvying it up behind the scenes somewhere.
What do you mean they're giving it up?
Divvying.
Up. Oh yeah, possible. Very possible. Let me see.
Well, if you're talking about climate, let's might as well play this old clip of mine, NPR clip on DeSantis. You have to look it up because it's from a couple of shows ago. DeSantis and climate change.
Okay. DeSantis.
Bring him back into the picture.
Got it.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has touted
No, it's DeSantis. We're doing it wrong. We say DeSantis, DeSantos, it's DeSantis.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has touted a record amount of spending to help his state prepare for the effects of climate change. But his policy on that front is coming under scrutiny by many residents still reeling from Hurricane Ian. Amy Green of WMFE in Orlando reports.
Jason Diaz awoke in the middle of the night to the sound of trickling water.
When I stepped up, I was already ankle deep in water.
The next few hours were a blur of evacuating family members and neighbors and swimming through 5 feet of water. A few days later, Diaz sat near a noisy, idling bus outside the Kissimmee Civic Center, which had been turned into a shelter for the displaced like him. Virtually everything he owned was swamped back at his apartment.
I'm not sorry about losing my stuff. It's just that I had, and I might get emotional, I had a collection of collectibles for my grandkids that I've been collecting for 30 years, and that's all gone.
When Hurricane Ian hit Florida, it destroyed coastal communities in southwest Florida before causing widespread flooding across the state's interior. The hurricane shows what states like Florida face as climate change leads to more extreme weather. DeSantis has focused his climate change policy on resilience. Under his leadership, the state has put more than $1 billion toward hardening infrastructure against rising seas and more destructive storms. The governor, a Republican, faces re-election next month and is considered a potential frontrunner for the GOP presidential nomination in 2024. During a stop in Daytona Beach, DeSantis said he's noticed that newer infrastructure seemed to fare better against Hurricane Ian.
The stuff that was new, so same with some of the homes, you do see the impact of that. And so I think we were right to do things like we have with the resilient coastline.
DeSantis's program was signed into law in 2021, which means it's unlikely to have had a big impact on infrastructure before the hurricane. Environmental groups say the governor's climate change policy is wrong.
Yeah, that was really pretty boring.
It was very boring. That's why it wasn't played.
What was that actually about?
It was about DeSantis being a climatologist. He's going to be a good guy to vote for.
Was that NTD? Tell me it was.
No, that was NPR.
Oh, goodness.
Which makes no sense if you think about it.
Oh, that actually kind of hurt. Yeah. Did you have something else before we could? I'll tell you what we're going to do. We have not even touched on Ohio. I know everyone's so excited to talk about Ohio. So we'll have to talk about Ohio. Ohio, Ohio, Ohio. Because that's all we can talk about. Because it's the political gambit of the hour. Abused by every politician, almost from the get-go. And also about Turkey. Turkey, there's some news we should talk about there. But before that, I'd like to say in the morning to you, the man who put the C in the fraudulent claims of fraud. Ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to my friend on the other end, Mr. John C. Dvorak.
Well, in the morning to you, Mr. Adam Curry. Also in the morning, all ships and sea boots on the ground, feet in the air, subs in the water, and all the dames and knights out there.
In the morning to the trolls over there in the troll room. We've had a lot of trolls hanging out in the troll room. You can be one if you want. Trollroom.io. You can log in right there. You do need an email address that actually works. I mean, some trolls think to, oh, I can circumvent this by doing a fake email address. No, because you have to confirm that you're there. So we can register trolls and track you down and shoot you. So let's count them.
Joke count. Whoa!
2294. I think that's a good number.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty standard for Sunday.
Well, that's not bad. It's been worse, that's for sure. Trolls. Trolls. You can also become a troll in the following manner. Get a new app, a modern app, that actually has all these capabilities. And we have a new website. It used to be newpodcastapps.com, still in play. Now we have podcastapps.com. These are the ones you want. And guess what's not on there? Apple, Spotify, podcastapps.com. You can find many modern podcast apps where you can actually get an alert, go straight into the troll room, troll along, hear the live stream, and you get all your podcasts in there as well. That's Podverse, Podcast Addict, Curio Caster. All of these work perfectly. Now let us... Oh, of course, we also have noagendasocial.com, where you can follow Adam at noagendasocial.com, John C. Dvorak at noagendasocial.com. No digital bill of rights over there. You do whatever you want, pretty much. Just don't piss me off, because then, you know, I can kick you off if I feel like it. Or if John tells me to, which happens a lot. John will say, kick that guy off. I'm like, okay.
That's not true. I've like twice.
Okay. All right.
Twice. In 5 years.
Now, let us thank the artists, the No Agenda artists, who are incredibly kind with their value. They contribute to the show every single show. While we're doing it live, they are creating art. We will use one of these pieces. We'll choose it right after the show is done. We thank the artist for episode 1530. We titled that one Red Queen. Roger Roundy had it just made us laugh. It had a nice appeal to it. This was the what are those flowers are those, like, what are those yellow flowers?
This is a flower of some sort.
It looks like a water lily of some sort. Yeah, it looks a bit like a lily. Sorry about your pipeline. Love, CIA. And Curry Dvorak, separated by a little cartoonish bomb. Somehow it struck the right chord with us.
Well, it definitely made you laugh a lot.
Yeah, I did. Well, I laugh. That's kind of what I'm looking for. I'm always looking for a piece of
laugh
that makes a cheap laugh. Yes, that makes both of us chuckle is even better. There were a couple ones in there that were pretty cheap. Let's see. Wow, a lot has been added. I can see now. We actually debated quite a while about the aircraft with the pins, with the print pins.
I use it for the newsletter.
I saw that. Now, what was at issue with this?
Well, for one thing, it's not an F-22 Raptor.
Yes.
I believe that's an F-16. Yes. So there's that.
A faux pas of epic proportions, obviously.
Yeah. It's also clip art, which is fine. He's probably licensed it. But it's been around a little too much. That clip art I've seen too often.
Yeah, and it was really, because we always do the Google image search.
But the pins were dynamite.
Yes. I mean, we could have used it, but we're just really afraid of Comics or Blogger giving a shit. So
he's going to go off,
it's really,
off on it.
It's really, so who created that?
Comic Strip Blogger had a really good piece, but we both knew just by looking at that it was done by AI.
Yeah, so automatically off the list. We thought the, was that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Top Gun by Nestworks? Very funny, very racist. We figured that wouldn't work. Oh, she had her.
Which one was this?
She's the pilot. She's the Top Gun pilot. We knew that we would be called out for racists. We just saw it like, nah, that's not going to work.
Oh, yeah. That's no, funny. That's no good.
L. Biden, which is kind of funny, but we don't.
I liked L. Biden.
Yeah, we don't like. Yeah. The green L. Biden?
Well, that's the Comic Strip Blogger one that obviously he can't draw Biden.
Yeah, that's right. That's the one that we hated because it's AI.
And I like the one next to it, too, the Sneaky Bearcat, but it's a little
bit very obscure. Very obscure. 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 Then there was some poker stuff, some confusing stuff. What was this? Ween, which I still don't understand. Still talking about balloons. Capitalist Agenda had a Red Queen Rising, I'd say semi-cheesecake, which we like, but no one would understand it. Everything seemed messy to me. You know what I mean?
Well, it wasn't a show with a lot of material that would be amenable for spot art.
So you're saying that we failed. We fell down. We didn't have a show that has good topics. Or good gags, or good jokes.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's possible. Uh-huh. It's possible. It's possible. Well, anyway, Roger Roundy, I think he was very surprised himself.
Oh, yeah. No, he's the pieces that when he's won, it's never for his good art.
Right. When he's swinging to swing out of his cleats, it never happens.
it doesn't work.
He just throws something out there. Yeah, we'll go for that. Thank you very much, Roger Roundy. We appreciate that and the work of all of the artists who support No Agenda with Value for Value. We ask for your time, your talent, your treasure. Go look at Gitmo, the gitmolist.org. You see all of the things that people have put up at websites, including noagendashow.net, including noagendameetups.com. I mean, the only thing we've actually done ourselves is Dvorak.org/NA, and it's problematic. So, and by the way, it's changing, I hear. I'm getting that change.
First quarter.
Now we'd like to thank our producers. We have...
Yeah, and let me do the first one, because the second one is by special request.
Okay.
And the
can
first
I just,
one here...
Can I just finish my rap about producers?
Sure. What was it?
Well, our producers, they bring the treasure part of time, talent, and treasure. In addition to that, they get credits. So we have associate executive producer, $200 or above. $300 above gets you an executive producer. These are forever credits you can use wherever credits are recognized and accepted. IMDb is a good place to go take a look. And we have some very nice donations today we're quite happy with. You go for it.
Well, we're happy with this one for sure. This is Kim, keeper of the Nutty Fluffers, who's been around, and she's in Hubbard, Oregon. She says, writes in, she came with $2,000.
Whoa! Huh? Yeah, we are happy with that one. Man, that's a lot of value.
She came to this conclusion after the deep fake of Joe Biden rapping at the end of show 1528 pushed her over the edge. I knew then and there I had... that I do listen, emphasize on do, to the best podcast in the universe. I also need to call my dad, John, and my mom, Melody, out as douchebags.
Douchebag.
One more.
Douchebag.
I will continue the harassment until they donate individually.
Nice.
Also, I need to ask for a little upgrade, a title upgrade. From this point forth, I'd like to be known as Countess Kim, keeper of the Nutty Fluffers. Thank you so much for all that you two do. I don't know, is she on the upgrade list? I'm not sure.
I believe so.
Keep it classy. Countess Kim of the Nutty Fluffers in Hubbard, Oregon. Now, she needs some jingles.
Okay.
R2-D2 F Cancer Karma.
Okay.
You've got... karma.
Now, I just want to check, because we have a producer to thank, then, an end-of-show mix producer for that Joe Biden mix. Was it this one?
There's spooks around here.
No, it was not the previous one. What episode was it, did she say?
Oh.
I think it was 1529.
Whatever it was. There was a good rap that was done by a Joe Biden voice.
Biden. Yeah, I just want to make sure we give... props. Shay Z, I think it was. Shay Z with a tweak Biden bops infomercial. I think that's the one. So there you go. The end of show mixers, producers, helping us out in all kinds of different ways. Beautiful. Thank you very much. And thank you. Yes, she's a Kim, keeper of the Nutty Fluffers, is on the upgrade list. Now we go to Philip Stazek, who specifically requested I read this one out because he says, my sister would have appreciated your sultry voice. This is a sad note. This insta-damehood is a switcheroo and dedication to my bright and beautiful sister, Jessica, who we tragically lost to the sea, to the power of the ocean, while vacationing together in the free state of Florida last week. She was the oldest of three siblings, age 43, and the only daughter to my parents. She leaves behind her loving husband, Mike. They were together for almost 26 years, high school sweethearts, started dating at age 17, and they never had a fight. My sister hit me in the mouth beginning of the nonsense, and they're still trying to sell as COVID back in March of 2020. I've listened to every podcast since and always appreciated the conversation and laughter with my sister while discussing the latest episodes. Unfortunately, I've been a douchebag, but I know my sister was part of the sustainable donation for some time and proudly contributed to the best podcast in the universe, working toward her damehood. I wanted this donation to ensure that she can sit at the big table in heaven and celebrate her dame name, dame Delphinium Jesser. And it's $1,000, by the way. At the round table, please serve up some grass-fed beef from the local ranch, pure H220, fresh garden vegetables and herbs, and polish it off with some heavenly hunk chunks. Whatever that is. This donation also goes out as a plea to the No Agenda Nation to help her husband, Mikey, to try to navigate and land back on his feet through this difficult time. His world has literally been flipped upside down. She was his light and his everything. Please consider donating to the best podcast in the universe. But also please consider donating to Jess's GoFundMe page for Mike. Please see links below to her obituary and the GoFundMe page. John C., I still hold the bottle of wine that she got for me for my 40th birthday based on your personal recommendation. She was very impressed by your prompt response. This will now be reserved for a very special day to open, likely her birthday. Lastly, please call out Steve from work as a douchebag. And the obituary strong. And a yak karma, please. Okay. Fantastic. You got it, man.
You've got karma.
And I have ordered everything you requested for the round table for her. Thank you very much. Sorry. And condolences, of course.
Sir Nacho Alcatraz is up from Mexico. And he has a poem. He says, "No Agenda Podcast, oh so bright. Adam and John bring truth to light." It's good. News deconstruction, saintly saved, listen and learn, be truly brave. Sincerely, ChatGPT and Sir Nacho Alcatraz. Ah, he had it done by the machine. Is that what he's trying to claim here?
Hey, only Zippy can do poems.
And he came in with $500. I'm going to go and read Brock Robinson's Oxford, Alabama, 333-76. I don't have a note from him. I'll look. Well, Adam reads the next fabulous note.
Yeah, well, give him a double up karma just in case you don't find the note.
You've got double up karma.
Our next note is 33-33.33, our favorite executive producer donation number from the Dirty Jersey Whore in Gladewater, Texas. That's a guy, by the way. No jingles, no karma. Would like to start up by saying No Agenda Podcast and No Agenda Community as a whole has definitely changed the trajectory of my life. Not a joke. Through the perils of COVID and into the other guiding principles such as sound money, Bitcoin, and sound food, the Beef Initiative, y'all have been a steady voice and constant source of grounding. Thanks for letting me ride along in this fantastic journey. No exit strategies for you. He wanted me to do that in the voice of the soup Nazi. With this donation, I surpassed the threshold to claim knight status. I'd like to be known as Sir Dirty Jersey Whore of the East Texas Piney Woods. At the round table, I'd like to request Denver cut steak and a fresh New England IPA from Forgotten Roads Ales. Quick shout out to Texas Joe, who organized a meetup in early 2020 at a brewery in Magnolia, Texas. I was there just minding my own business when the subject of podcast came up in the tiny taproom area. Joe hit me in the mouth and I didn't even realize it at the time. Cheers, Texas Joe. Now I host a monthly meetup with the help of Fletcher from Hog Story Podcast in hopes of inspiring some other hapless victim. Thanks for being awesome. Dirty Jersey Whore. And thank you. He's like 6'8", the Dirty Jersey Whore. He's, yeah, it's quite a dude. Quite a dude.
Big.
Yeah, he's a big guy. Big guy. And a whore.
Agnes Baylog in Burien, Washington. Anyone's ever been to Seattle and rented a car and knows where that is. Dear John C. and Adam, this is my first donation. Please de-douche me.
You've been de-douched.
I was hit in the mouth on the Barnhart podcast in December 2021. Your media deconstruction probably saved my life, and it certainly saved my sanity. Woo! I'm one of those traditional Latin mass Catholics who recently identified by the, or that was recently identified by the FBI as a possible domestic terrorist. We must be doing something right. Anywho, I love you guys. Thanks for making me laugh and opening my eyes. I've loved hearing about Adam and the Keeper's Faith journey. Lots of Catholics praying for you guys over the Barnhart podcast, including myself. There's something you know. No karma, but a Sharpton jingle. Can you spare it? Christ is King. Big hugs, Agnes from Burien, Washington.
Which is out by the airport, apparently.
There's no real conflict.
Leon Atkinson, Martinez, California, 21870. And I have a typewritten note here. I've enclosed 21870 to mark my 53rd natal anniversary. 2 years ago, I felt nostalgic for listening to the Daily Source Code. I'm grateful to have rediscovered a couple of people who aren't totally full of bullcrap. Everyone else seems to have lost their minds of late. Yes. Well, when you're part of the No Agenda community, connection is protection. But your conversations have been a calming respite. I look forward to them on my regular walks in the hills above the Carquinez Strait. I guess this offering of value qualifies me for a de-douching. It does.
You've been de-douched.
Oh, but I'm going to pull a switcheroo and give all the credit to my wife, Vicky, 25 years, and we've never had a fight. Aside from being the best life partner, she helps me run 18 Intelligence, 18int.com, our humble internet consultancy. Oh, that's interesting. I should look that up. 18int, 18int.com. For jingles, I challenge you to dig up the power of pure intellect. I looked for it. That's a daily source code opener. Lost. I have no idea where it is. I don't think it's there. Followed up with some yak karma. That I can do. I will take that as a signal to begin meditation on loving kindness toward myself, my family, knights, dames, the two of you, and even all those people out there who are still 100% full of bullcrap, a.k.a. grist for the mill. And he signs Leon Atkinson. All right, I'm going to make the switch you right now.
You've got karma.
Vicky.
Aida in Richmond Hill, Ontario, Canada. $264.53. Just made a donation from Canada for $373. So we should upgrade this person to executive producer.
Okay.
But the PayPal page didn't give me an option for a short note. Tom Peroni is the person who introduced me to your show several years. Tom Peroni donation. Several years ago. I haven't looked back since. This is the message I would like to share. By the way, the intro into the note is longer than the note.
Yes.
Just saying, you can just send a note, it's fine. Thank you for all you do. This world needs sanity, the sanity of your show. Request a relationship karma for my daughter, Emily, who has been searching for an uninjected partner for a while. He's out there somewhere. Cheers, Aida.
Yeah, well, that means we got to roll out the goat.
You've got karma.
The goat always helps. Let us know if you find him. Wert Fuller is in Batavia, New York, with a $250 donation and writes in on very handsome, looks like bicentennial stationery. Buzz plus kill. Just because it's the best podcast in the universe, karma for all Gitmo Nation, because we all need it. From Wert E. Fuller.
You've got karma.
Sir Jeremy Chumfatty in Oakville, California, wine country.
Yeah.
222.33. ITM John and Adam, great show. Have some money. Sir Jeremy.
Thank you. Row of ducks. We always love the ducks.
Row of ducks.
Corey Tibbetts, Westminster, Colorado, 220.21. This donation.
What about Bradley? You left Bradley out.
I'm sorry, Bradley. 222.22. Row of ducks. That's the row of ducks I was thinking of. Bradley Fox from Presque Island, Maine. Thank you both for all you do. Would you add me to the birthday list for 0222? You bet. It's a little early, but you bet. You're here. You're on it.
Corey Tibbetts, the aforementioned in Westminster, Colorado, 220.21. This donation of 220.21 is in honor of my smoking hot girlfriend, Amy Traver, and our two-year anniversary. I love you, and I look forward to many years of adventure ahead. Because the surgery is now complete, and we're living butt to butt indefinitely. Thanks for being my best friend and lover. Relationship karma to all. That's $220.21.
What kind of surgery is that?
They've now attached it to the butt.
I guess so. And send pictures.
You've got karma.
Over to Nashville, Tennessee, 220 from Kirsty Barnett. First heard Adam on Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck donation. Hit my husband in the mouth. Now we listen to every show. Many blessings to you and John, although I really hate the D word. I suppose I must request a de-douching. No jingles, no karma. Actually, Dreb Scott, who does our chapters, gave me a new word. It's you can, instead of a douche pouch, you can say a douchebag, a juice pouch. That's what he...
That's gross.
A de-pouching, de-juicing.
You've been de-douched.
Juice pouch.
You know, if you don't like the word,
don't
use it at all.
Yeah.
Sir Eric's up. He's the last guy here on this list of associate executive producers and executive producers. He's in good old Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Dear John and Adam, I request all karma possible. All karma. For Melanie M. in Texas. Thank you, Sir Eric, Knight of Samhain.
You've got karma.
Now, those are the executive and associate executive producers. We do have a few more to thank, down to the 50s, and John's going to do that while I prepare our meetup reports and our daming ceremony, which is on deck today.
We'll start off with Christine in Raleigh, North Carolina, $133.33, followed by Belinda Schreurs, Schreurs, in Devon Meadows, Australia. And it's a switcheroo for a smoking hot husband, Mark, for his 57th birthday, which is coming up on the list. Thomas Baird in Tilburg, Netherlands, another birthday donation. I'm not seeing any switcheroo or anything, so let's go to Kevin. And they came in 111.11, roller dicks. Kevin Fagerberg, 100. He did send in a note, which is just a short note saying, great show.
Yeah.
Ronnie Chambliss in Attica, Indiana, 100. Another birthday. Mark Kendall in Vernal, Utah, 100. Sir Kevin McLaughlin right there, following it up. He's up to number 134, 135, some outrageous number of boob donations at 8008. Followed by Stephen of the Papudra in Fort Collins, Colorado, and 808. It's the first time on the boob train. Needs a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
Jason Marer, $80 in Vancouver, Washington. Raymond Bresler in Arlington, Washington, 6996. Sir Raymond, is that Sir Rick? That's a good one. Well, we have a new back office, and they don't know that everyone's nicknames off the top of their head. It has to be written on the. Well, they can't because this is a bank check. I think it's Sir Rick. Mark Rosinski in Los Osos, California, 6969. Impressed by the show. Blue Moon Bozeman in Belgrade, Montana, 67. Michael Vivieres in Sanburnton, New Hampshire, 6633. Kevin O'Brien in Chicago, Illinois, 6006. Michael Myers in Mandeville, Louisiana, 5510. Needs a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
Dean Roker, 5510. Armando Guerrera in Bandera, Texas.
Hey, you know, he's the guy who inspired Mailman Dan to donate on the last show, $500, and he used to be my mail carrier in Austin. Guess what? He's now moved 30 minutes down the road to Kerrville. He's following me. He's stalking me.
He probably is your handler.
I hope so.
Armando donated 55. Clay's Henry in Rancho Palos Verdes, California, 5242. Andrew Benz in Imperial, Missouri, 5005. Trent Trueblood in Scottsdale, Arizona, 5001. And onward with the $50 donors, name and location if I have both. Gadget Freak in Western Springs, Illinois. Andrew Gusick in Sir Andrew in Greensboro, North Carolina. Tatiana Prince in Hollywood, Florida. Joe Oswald in Lithia, Florida. Nathan Cochran in Franklin, Tennessee. Stephen Schumach in Xenia, Ohio. Peter Odo in Ridge, New York. Alexander Verdejo in Gig Harbor, Washington. Scott Lavender in Montgomery, Texas. Leanne Shipley in Covington, Washington. Daniel Galloway in Marietta, Georgia. Alan Fletcher in Rio Verde, Arizona. And last but not least, Sir Jerry Wingenroth in Saugus, California. I want to thank these people for making this show a reality show, 1534.
We have two make goods. The first one from James Nelson. Had to go back and listen. I think when I was looking for jingles for one of the donors, somehow he got skipped. There was no note. It got lost. He's in the vortex. But now we've got him. Cristo Onesti, he says. I saw Adam's most recent segment on JRE. Broken donation, and thought he would be interested in exploring some of Jay Dyer's content. Yes, I shall take a look at that. He says, God bless you, John Adam. He wanted a couple of jingles, Freedom, Pew Pew, Mac and Cheese, and It's So Juicy. I'll play them now for you.
Freedom! Pew, pew. Mac and
cheese.
Mac and Cheese by Ayn Rand.
And it's so juicy.
There you go. And to make good for Dame Elizabeth from show 1499. Wow. Apologies for the way overdue follow-up note. Yes, indeed, Dame Elizabeth. Not sure where time has gone. I saw that the lottery was at $33 million, took us a sign to dig up this email and resend. We didn't receive our producer credits for show 1499 amongst all of the anniversary crazy, yet we were happy to be mentioned in the knighting ceremony. Would love the credit for the show in the show notes. No need for a mention. I should make the point of that. Okay. No need for a mention other than that we really need the house selling karma. We haven't been able to sell without it for almost a year, and there's nothing wrong with our house, just really bad timing. Thank you for all you do, Sir and Dame Scott and Elizabeth Vervink. And thank you very much, and sorry that we missed you, and thank you for following up with us. Here is your house selling karma.
You've got karma.
And thank you all very much for supporting us here for show 1531, the No Agenda Show. We appreciate it.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Order. Shut up, slave.
Shut up,
Leon Atkinson turns 50 or turned 53 yesterday. Thomas Byard turns 41 today. Ronnie Chambliss turned 60 today as well. Belinda Schurz wishes her husband Mark Schurz a happy birthday. He turns 57 tomorrow. And Bradley Fox celebrates on February 22nd. Happy birthday from everybody here at the best podcast in the universe. You heard it earlier. We have an upgrade for a dame, actually a vague countess, who now becomes a countess. Countess Kim Keep of the Nutty Fluffers. Congratulations, Countess. Thank you very much for supporting the No Agenda Show. And you might as well hang out here because we have quite the intricate round table, as we do have. That's funny. Our back office immediately considered the Dirty Jersey Whore to be a dame, but no, Dirty Jersey Whore, it's under the dame category on the spreadsheet. No, we've got a knight and a dame. So we need one of each for today, John, for the swords, the swordage.
I need two swords?
Yeah, you do. We got a dame and a knight, and he's
eight feet. Sword. It's got two sides. You can just flip it over yourself. Here it is.
Oh, that's a nice one. Thanks. I haven't seen that one in a while. Jessica Stasek Abbott and Dirty Jersey Whore, step up here on the podium. Both of you supported the No Agenda Show in the amount of $1,000 or more. You did the accounting yourself. We trust you. It is the honor system. And here we go. I pronounce the KB, Dame Delphinium Jesser and Sir Dirty Jersey Whore of the East Texas Piney Woods. For you, we've got hookers and blow or rent boys and Chardonnay, grass-fed beef from the local ranch, pure HCO, fresh garden vegetables and herbs, and polish it off with some heavenly hunk chunks, and Denver cut steak and a fresh New England IPA from Forgotten Road Ales. Along with that, we got some sparkling cider and Escort, ginger ale and gerbils, breast milk and pavlova, and of course, mutton and mead. And obviously, our dame is in memoriam, so she will be consuming all that she can in heaven. We do appreciate the support, of course, from family and from Dirty Jersey Whore directly. Go to noagendanation.com/rings. Give us your ring size or whatever you'd like that to be for our dame. In memoriam, and we'll send it off to wherever requested. You can enter your address there as well. And thank you for supporting the No Agenda Show for 15 years, the best podcast in the universe.
No Agenda.
Now, a lot of meetups happening today. Already over, probably, and I think Roger Roundy was hosting the DC meetup at the Lincoln Memorial. Maybe still underway, the local 76 annual Fishtown Friendly at the Philadelphia Brewing Company. Same for Columbus, Ohio Smokehouse Brewing Company, the Central Ohio meetup. We have the Northern Wake County Dark Winter of Death Gathering in Raleigh, North Carolina, Compass Rose Brewery. Say hi, everybody. Wave for us. The Over the Hill and Through the BS in Infinite Ale Works, Oscala, Florida. Ocala, Florida. Sorry. The COA Indy No Agenda Tribal Meetup and Swap Meet, 3 o'clock. These are all pretty much over, I guess. Although Indianapolis, those guys hang out for a while. St. Joseph Brewery and Public House. We've got the NA 3 Mile Island Evac Zone Meetup. I'm expecting a lot of reports from these people. Evergreen Brewing. We have the Mardi Gras Grip and Grin in East Texas. That is kicking off in just about an hour from now. Skipper's Pier Coastal Cajun Kitchen in Gladewater. That is the Dirty Jersey Whores locale, I guess, with the Hog Story crew. And finally, the Rational Drinkers Club at Fort Collins, Colorado, 6 o'clock Mountain Time, Stodgy Brewing Company. Let's see, we had one report from the Netherlands. This was the first annual or first monthly Leiden Amygdala Check meetup. And it being the Netherlands, people were consuming all kinds of groovy stuff.
Okay, here's Sir Hendrik, well, almost live. From Leiden, his date of birth, his place of birth. And he's already taken a few hits from the North from the fork. And now over to the next one.
Yeah, yeah. Good morning, Adam and John. To the next one.
In the morning, Sebastian here. Thanks for the meetup.
Another Sebastian. Greetings from the Node Runners. Stack stats.
Detective Dudarashi, thanks. Peace to all slaves.
And remember, I'm not crazy. I'm an aeroplane.
This is Brandon, and I appreciate all the let's go encouragement tonight.
Hello, Lucas from Oostgeest, and it's good to see Hendrik finally.
Hi, this is Baron Rob from Greater Limburg, and it's really a great success to have this Leiden meetup on the go.
Hello, I'm Nick. This is great. See you
in the morning.
Yes, yes. You wanted to say something?
Drunk.
or as we would say, strunk. Stoned and drunk. Oh, very good, people. Leiden. It's a university town. Can you tell? Those are the meetups. That's the meetup report. And though you heard the meetups earlier, there's a lot of meetups going on. This is if you want to be part of the community. You're listening to the show, you already are. But believe me, you go to one of these meetups, you think you're weird. Everybody's weird. No one will be like you. No, every single person is different, but somehow we all fit together. These meetups are good. They're a protection because connection is protection. And you can find them at noagendameetups.com. If you can't find one near you, start one yourself. It's easy. And a party.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days.
Bom, bom, bom.
You want to be where you want me. Triggered on hell's flame. You want to be where everybody feels the same. It's like a party.
All right, I got the ISOs. I know one of mine is dynamite. One of them has to hit. One of them.
Well, I would hope.
Do you have any?
I have two.
All right. What can we hear yours first?
I have fraud,
fraudulent claims of fraud.
Okay.
Classic, and tool.
A tool for lazy preachers.
Yeah. Let's see. See if you like one of mine.
I'm obsessed with this show.
Come on, not bad, not bad. Or
sensational, sensational.
Or
Justin Trudeau.
That's got to be my favorite.
It might be. I can't understand what he said.
That's the opener of Justin Trudeau. That's how they announced Justin.
Oh, that one. Oh.
Justin Trudeau. Like.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah. I don't care for that one. I like the other two, both of them. And the second one, I think, is the winner.
Sensational. Sensational.
That one?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take it. It's all good. It's all good, people. It's all good. Oh, let me see. There was...
Well, before we go into anything serious...
Oh, please.
I'm behind in my TikTok catches.
We need a jingle for this.
And so I got a TikTok lady here, bitch. She's beside herself, not knowing quite what to do. And this is what people like this, I guess, obsess all day about things like this because I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea why anyone was obsessed so much that they're going to put it out there for everyone on TikTok to listen to it. This is TikTok, the gendered lady.
So
So I was just picking up my vehicle from an oil change, and the person came out of the garage and said, "What can I do for you, young lady?" And I know that this was intended to be a greeting of respect and kindness, or politeness maybe, but I had this immediate like, okay, young, maybe comparatively, I'll take it. But I was like, lady, what do I do with that? Like, it's so complicated because I know this person only intended kindness. There was a smile on their face. Like, I know that they weren't trying to like patronize me or gender me, but I felt so gendered and so inappropriately gendered. And I don't know what to do with that. Like, what do you do with that when someone like has the best of intentions, and I don't really want to spend all of my spoons trying to educate someone at the Costco car center?
Wait a minute. So she was misgendered?
No.
She was just gendered.
She was gendered.
She didn't want to be gendered at all.
Right.
Oh, this is one of these or those women. I've learned that from you. This is one of those women who when you, if you hold the door open, like, well, I can do it myself.
Yeah, exactly. Same person.
And sounds like that too. I can do it myself. Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm like that.
You She's know, a he, sweetheart.
Yeah. Here in the South, we yeah, right. Here in the South, we hold the door open for the dames.
You probably move the chair for them, open the door in the car. Oh,
if a woman stands up at the table, I stand up. If she comes back, I stand up. And this lady would creep. Hate that. I'm a creep. I'm nothing but a creep. And that was very lighthearted. Thank you for catching us up on the latest nut jobbery. I did want to mention, and now none of these are playable, but I put them in the show notes. There's now two Turkish politicians. The most recent one is the head of the Ministry of Interior of Turkey after the earthquake. And this is what the head of the ministry said. I have the translation. There are no coincidences, and we told the American ambassador that. A week ago, we did not agree with the increase in the number of NATO members, and a week later, we had a catastrophic earthquake. We know who did it and how. Get your dirty paws off Turkey. We will draw our own conclusions. And with that, several mentions of, and that this I think is true, that the Turkey earthquake does not appear to have an epicenter. Which is interesting.
Well, even if it had an earthquake machine, as you will contend,
yes,
doesn't an earthquake have an epicenter? Like the one in Japan had a very distinctive epicenter where the machine was?
Right. Well, no, the machine, no, it was a bomb that went off the coast. It started the tsunami. We all know that. That wasn't the earthquake machine. That was an underwater explosion. I'm just trying to change history.
You're trying to change your own history.
Yes.
Wasn't there an epicenter yes, of there the was. Haiti that, earthquake?
Yes. That's why it's weird that this one didn't have an epicenter, but it also ripped all along, like a huge tear in the earth. Anyway, this is what the politicians are saying. It's not me anymore. I'm not alone. They're saying it. Meanwhile, what you didn't hear in the region, because it also hit Syria, although it was northwestern Syria, we seem to be killing people all over the place.
A leader of the ISIS terrorist network in Syria is dead, but at the price of four wounded Americans.
An explosion during the raid also resulted in four U.S. troops and one other working dogs suffering some injuries.
U.S. Special Operations Forces went in by helicopter and surrounded a nondescript house in northeastern Syria. But as they closed in on their target, an explosion, either a suicide vest or a hand grenade, went off.
The troops and the working dog are in stable condition.
It is a constant threat. In 2019, when commandos raided the Syrian compound of ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, he blew up himself and three children to avoid capture. Last year, Ibrahim al-Hashimi al-Qurashi, another leader of ISIS, set off a booby trap that leveled the third floor of his house, killing himself, his wife, and two children. This time, the target was Hamza al-Hamzi. And this time, he apparently waited for the Americans to get close enough.
He was overseeing the group's deadly terrorist network in eastern Syria before he was killed in the raid.
There are about 900 American troops in Syria working with local Syrian forces to keep the ISIS terrorist network from staging a comeback. It's a deadly game of hide and seek. But no American troops were killed or wounded in all of last year.
This is not in the news. It's really weird. We're just killing people. And what is the threat there? Why are we doing this? Any ideas, Bueller?
I don't even know that story.
No, but this is brand new. This just came out. That's my point. This is kind of nuts. We're just killing people everywhere.
So I've got two epicenters for the first two Turkish earthquakes.
Yes, it was two. The second was apparently even worse.
Well, the first one was in Gaziantep, was the epicenter. And the second one was in, I scrolled it off, but the second one has a definite center too. This is bull crap. There was no epicenter.
I'm just telling you what the politicians are saying.
Well, those guys, they hate us.
Well, yeah, with good reason. We've been doing it everywhere around the world. Take Fukushima. You just said it yourself.
I have a Turkish clip to show you how many buildings were destroyed. They should take aim at their own politicians who didn't enforce building codes, which were, I guess, since they have so many earthquakes there, whether there's an earthquake machine or not.
They do have quite a lot. If you look at the list, but this is the biggest, was it? Up to 45,000 dead, they estimate?
But listen to this clip.
Turkey's interior minister said today that over 80,000 buildings in his nation.
That's the same guy. The same guy.
Turkey's interior minister said today that over 80,000 buildings in his nation were either destroyed or have become uninhabitable after last week's quake. Wow. The situation across the border in Syria is dire for the millions left homeless, so many of whom already suffered greatly through nearly 12 years of war. Supplying shelter and aid is a prime focus there now. But remarkably, people are still being pulled from the rubble after a week and a half.
That is remarkable, especially the
Time there's something like that, there's always some guy. They're a month.
Yeah, what we need.
Living on his fingernails. I mean,
it's horrible. Weird. Well, what we need is a rescue of a child, you know, the one that, that's been trapped for weeks. And that's what the international. Because the press is not really doing much with this story. That's also weird. I mean, it's such the scale of the devastation, just outside of the earthquake machine stuff, but the scale of the devastation is almost unimaginable. But there's just nothing.
No, the satellite pictures and some of the other photos of the cracks are actually like real, because they go right through highways.
Yeah.
And they divide the highway by, it's not like 100 yards, but it's like it's not even in the same county. The highway ends, there's a big hole in the earth, and the other highway's way over there somewhere. Excellent. It's quite amazing.
Let's stay in not quite the region, but in sandy areas. The new trifecta is the new triple threat is Russia, China, Iran. And it looks like we're up to our tricks in Iran. France 24 had this lady on, and she works for a university, but she's very distinct kind of look, like French with the big fro hair, just very distinct. I would say she might even be a spook, but just listen to this report as we move into a familiar territory to our spooks in Iran.
I'm joined now on set by Chaura Makarimi from the University of Montreal. Thank you for joining us here today. You are an expert in Iran and notably wrote the book about the 1979 Iranian Revolution.
Okay, that spook.
I'd like to ask you, first of all, is this movement losing its momentum a little bit? We've heard less about it, certainly outside Iran, in recent weeks. It entered another phase. Actually, what we heard about were the insurrections of fall 22. So it was the first stage, and it was very vivid in the streets, and it was breaking a lot of red lines, a lot of political boundaries that were set for the last 40 years. That was very impressive. And what we see now is a political organization of the Iranian society in order to kind of carry on another phase of that confrontation with the state, with political demands. So we have seen leader, opposition leader, like Green Movement leader Mirosan Mousavi, who's in house arrest for 13 years now. And he has written a letter saying that no change is possible in Iran within the frame of the theocracy. So he demands a regime change as well. And this is the first time, you know, this is very new, because for the last 13 years, he hasn't done that. And 400 political and civil society figures in Iran have signed a letter of support to his letter. And we have also 2 days ago, 20 unions and organization within Iran who have signed a common letter. So they have come to a common demand, asking for change, you know, for separation of church and the state, for equal pay for women and men. So we are very much into the women life freedom movement yet, for the release and conditional release of all political prisoners. Many political prisoners have been released. And when they were released, the women political prisoner released, they photographed themselves outside of the prison without the hijab. So it shows that we are released, but we are not going to, stand aside. We are pursuing the fight. So I think that it's changing forms.
Regime change on deck. Looks like
I thought my DeSantis clip was bad.
No, this was your DeSantis clip really sucked. This at least shows this is regime change.
There's some woman that lives in Montreal. She doesn't know what's going on. She's a spook for Canada.
Regime change on deck.
Okay, I'm saying no.
Okay.
I think this was just another test, like the Green Revolution or whatever, that one purple, what, I don't remember the color, that they tried during the Obama administration. This is another shot at it, and I think they already, but it's over.
She said it's the next phase.
Well,
okay.
You want to put, you got a Deadpool, when?
After they do their nuclear test.
Oh, if they do a nuclear test.
It's coming up.
No, they're not going to do it.
Okay.
If they do that, that's a huge mistake.
I'm going to stay in the sandy areas. This is part of the Great Reset. This could be your country.
A Beirut bank burns. Several dozen people in Lebanon attacked banks on Thursday and blocked roads. They're protesting against the informal restrictions on cash withdrawals in place for years of financial crisis that prevent Lebanese from getting their hands on their own savings. The crisis has slashed the value of the Lebanese pound by more than 98% since 2018. Yay. Protester Rami Gandour says everyone should be up in arms.
What are you Lebanese people waiting for to go down and take your rights from this mafia of thieves that's ruling? Where are the human rights? There is no electricity, no water, nothing at all in this country. Don't they feel us while they're sitting in their palaces? They have no feelings for the people. They see us as sheep. We won't stay silent about our life's worth.
At least six banks were targeted as the currency hit a new record low value on Thursday. That's according to Depositors Outcry, a lobby representing people with money stuck in the banks. Depositors lacking cash to pay for basics, food, bills, even healthcare, are seeking access to their funds through lawsuits. Or sometimes by force. People trying to take out their own money have staged hold-ups. The Lebanese pound was changing hands at around £80,000 to the dollar on Thursday, dropping from £70,000 just 2 days earlier.
Devalued their money by 98%.
Yeah, so if you have $100,000 in the bank, it's worth $2,000.
You know, there's a guy named
That's not good.
There's a guy named Saifedean Ammous who moved from Lebanon. He's now in Austin. And he says he was so lucky because he put most of his money into Bitcoin. I mean, in this case, Bitcoin would have fixed that. which I think is pretty brilliant.
He could have put it in American treasuries too. That would have saved his ass.
Well, it depends how long he had the Bitcoin. American treasuries probably.
What if you bought the Bitcoin at 60,000?
Yeah, you still, it's better. You still have 30,000 left over. Better than 2,000.
Yeah, well, anything's better than 2,000, but American treasuries would have made some money on the deal.
Mm. Okay, well, I'm sure that's what everyone wanted to do. I love people burning down the bank thinking their money's actually in there. That's the funniest part.
Yeah.
Or trying to hold it up.
That's an old wives' tale that the money's in the bank.
Yeah. Did you know that the U.S. banks, ever since COVID, they don't have to have any, they don't have to have 10% reserve. There's a zero reserve policy still. They never release that. It's kind of scary.
Well, you know, as you get your money out of these local banks, I know at Mechanics, I've seen somebody trying to get their money out, but they told me they had to fill out some paperwork.
Oh, yeah, more than 10 grand.
And then you have to wait 24 hours so they deliver the money.
What? Because
there's no money there.
I know. This is the worst. And we have a local bank here, community bank, which is great, and that's where we keep our money. But all their services are outsourced to some, you know, tech firm. Gotta wonder how it all works.
It doesn't. This is microservices architecture taken to an extreme.
Yeah, yeah. If you fuck up, so you screw up your password, you know, you can't talk to them during the weekend.
No, you can't. This was a nightmare.
It is. So there was big, kind of a big deal about this Israeli firm that apparently is disinformation for hire for elections. You hear this story?
I like it.
Next, interference in over 30 elections worldwide. An investigation by the Paris-based group of journalists called Forbidden Stories has shone a spotlight on Team Jorge and the 50-year-old Israeli driving these nefarious activities. Laurent Richard joins us in the studio. He's part of the team at Forbidden Stories. Laurent, thank you very much for being with us. Who is the man who's allegedly behind all of this? Tell us about him.
So, officially, he only has a nickname, Jorge, and he made a lot of effort during all the investigation to hide his real name. But at the end of the investigation, with the work of 100 reporters, we finally found out who was the guy, and his name is Tal Anan, and Tal Anan is a former Israeli soldier who is leading that very secret cell unit in charge of producing disinformation for hire services. So it's a business that is kind of expensive. When the people from our team, from Radio France and the IRS were infiltrating in an undercover investigation this company, he was asking them to pay €6 million to influence an election in Africa.
6 million. Who's paying that kind of money then?
Well, it's the kind of people who might have 6 million to pay for that might be state actors or big private companies as well. It depends. You can there is a different level of services they can provide you. Then during the infiltration, they were able to show how, for instance, in Kenya, they were able to hack the Telegram account of three advisors of the current president, and in real life they were doing that. So it's what is very concerning with our findings in this investigation is how two kind of industry met each other: the industry of the cyber surveillance on one hand, and on the other, and the industry of the influence.
What I find most interesting about this story is this group of journalists, the Forbidden Stories Group, a Paris-based nonprofit that coordinates investigations with 150 reporters, more than 60 news organizations worldwide, including the Washington Post, The Guardian, and Le Monde. I don't know what do you think that is?
What bothers me is the Washington Post.
Yes, and The Guardian.
And right The Guardian, two
right
lefties.
Right off the bat.
Yeah. Right off the top. And Le Monde, I think, is a left-leaning operation, too. So I'm not impressed by that. I don't like this partisan approach to news covering.
Yeah, Laurent Richard, that's the guy. Oh, he's an award-winning investigative journalist, documentary filmmaker, founder of Forbidden Stories. Anyway, so they did a whole under, like a kind of almost like a Project Veritas undercover video. I wonder, I got to wonder if the guy actually did anything or if this was more a sales job for him. You know, clearly he's not being arrested or anything. He's not being perp walked anywhere. So how good was it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you have anything on Ohio? Because everyone's all jacked about Ohio.
No, I skipped Ohio because I didn't see anything that was new.
The main thing I need to discuss with you is this Ohio governor, Mike DeWine.
Yeah, they hate him.
Tell me that guy isn't a dead ringer for George Burns.
George Burns?
Yeah, the comedian.
I didn't see the George Burns. I'd have to look at his picture.
Go to the Wikipedia
George
page.
George Burns had huge ears. Always had a funny smile on his face.
Look at DeWine.
Okay, I'm going to look at DeWine and see if
he's a young George Burns. He's got pretty big ears. He got some saucers there.
Is it Mike DeWine?
Mike DeWine. Yeah, I mean he looks more like George Burns in the videos.
Yeah, I see it.
Okay.
So it's the straight shot that makes him look like Burns. His side view, it's just a straight up shot with him smiling, it looks like George Burns.
So what I love most about and we got a lot of boots on the ground, people nearby, people saying, well, it seems like there's a lot of stuff being exaggerated. Certainly a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, I got dead everything around here. There's not really a lot of evidence. Well,
there's not a lot of coverage to begin with. So I'm sure the only exaggerated stuff is the only time where you can get any news.
What I find this whole thing was, as far as I'm concerned, was a political football from the get-go. And, now Trump is like, I'm going to go see the people over there, which is a political move. He's running for president.
Oh, yeah. I think it's foolish. I think it's dumb.
I agree. I think it's a dumb idea.
It's like the anchors of NBC, CBS, and, going to some place. What do they need to be there for? They're just getting in the way.
Yeah.
And then we had this little situation with Tucker. So there's something going on in one of the Kentucky churches or some college.
Well, hold on. Why don't you stay with Ohio for a second? You're just running by it. I have a couple of things to discuss.
Okay.
Just want to give you all the conspiracy theories. This is a town of 4,700 people. So it turns out that perhaps they wanted to put a high-speed rail through this very town. That's one. It's all Trump's fault, according to Buttigieg. So
it's always Trump's fault.
There's your political edge. The people of East Palestine. And why is it Palestine and not Palestine, even though you spell it the same way?
That's the way they pronounce it there. It's like there's a couple towns around here that are pronounced not like they're written.
Okay. It's like Rodeo Drive. Because here would be Rodeo.
Rodeo's a good example.
Here would be Rodeo Drive. Okay.
Yeah.
Looks like the people of East Palestine were put into a medical test. They were rolling out medical device sensors, and they were the test market. It's always a good one. See if you, to see if you ingested something or if you become sick somehow. Yeah, the My ID Medical Service. There you go. I like the Amtrak 2035 map the best. Because that shows Amtrak with high-speed rail going straight through this town. So, of course, we had to blow it all up. But in general, I sent you an article. I know you don't like where it came from, but it seems like the actual contamination of the environment, may be a bit overblown. Because that's the part that I'm just questioning. It's not great to have this happen, but it does happen a lot with these types of all kinds of chemicals. You're the chemical expert. So what is your view on the vinyl chloride? How much is it, parts per million is in there? What do you think is the actual risk to the residents?
I wouldn't live there with that big mushroom cloud and all that vinyl chloride. That stuff is nasty. So those guys can downplay that if they want, but just look at it. What a mess.
Is that cloud still there?
No, the cloud's gone, but the mess that's left over is ridiculous. And it just had to be a lot. They put it in a bunch of ditches and lit it off. It was seeping into the ground. It's terrible. I wouldn't, the downplay that mess by anybody because, oh, well, it's bullshit. It's only vinyl chloride. So what? It's not. I'm not listening to that.
Okay. Which is why I asked you. So I think it's just at this point, it's just a political football. No one really cares about the people. That's obvious. And the reason why no one sprang into action is because it happens three times a day. This stuff happens all the time. And we do have...
Well, not with tanks of vinyl chloride, it doesn't.
No, but derailments happen. And
yeah, there's over 1,000 a year.
So the one email from Boots on the Ground from one of our producers who has standing, he says, you know, all mainline tracks have hotbox detectors, HBDs, in-track safety device that checks axle wheel temperatures. Says, I've never been to Ohio, but I did check everything, and it seems like they have a HBD about 20 miles from the crash site near Salem, Ohio. The train should have had its temperature checked and received a hot wheel alarm. And what he's questioning is kind of where what we started with, that this seems to be just a railroad failure, you know, not enough people on these trains. They actually want to do away with cabooses. You've been following this? They want to get rid of cabooses?
Going to get rid of them. There, I haven't seen a caboose in 25 years, and I'm right by a rail.
Then what? Why are they making a big deal of that? It's all political, everything. And then all of these cars have pop-off valves. And our expert Boots on the Ground says, yeah, vinyl chloride is deadly. I said, but of the five different choices they could have made on how to handle this, they kind of took the worst one. I mean, the one you want to try first is try and keep the tanks cool and hope that the pop-off valves work, because then they wouldn't have had to blow it up. So the blowing up thing is kind of the red flag here.
Well, we had the clip from the last show of the hazmat guy saying that they were keeping them cool with the hoses. Oh, and so they could have just kept doing that.
They did do that.
And then they pulled the hoses off to blow them up.
So here's a quick Boots on the Ground. I live 5 miles out from ground zero. Just want to give you Boots on the Ground what's happening here. Nothing accurate has come out since this started. Norfolk got their train track fixed, left town claiming threats on life on their life was made. That's why they didn't show up for the town hall. Unofficially, the reason the emergency order was lifted before testing was that the trains couldn't pass through town while there was a state of emergency still in effect. From what I see, there isn't as much death as reported. For one, the dead chickens are about 15 miles away from the crash, while mine in the same path, 5 miles away, are happy as can be. And if you saw how scratched up the woman making the claim was, you'd believe the local lore that she is definitely chalked those. That she definitely chalked those. What do you mean chalked? What is chalking the chickens?
I don't know. Choked.
No, it says chalked. No dogs. Yeah, no dogs have died as of yet. No cats. And there should be. Due to a very bad feral cat issue in town. Possibly 3 caged foxes. The fish were minnows. The stream that came from 10-15 foot wide, never deeper. So he's kind of downplaying all the disaster, but yeah, I'm sure producer Joe, you know, like you, doesn't really want to be in that situation. And everything else, I mean, you know, there's conspiracy theories about the 5 million gallons of water a day that the Intel fab apparently nearby needs. Have you heard of this? I mean, this is a lot.
No, this is completely news to me.
Yeah. So there's, you know, they need to bypass the Ohio River and cut these people off. I guess we'll just see what plays out. There's enough conspiracy theories, but to me, everything here now is just political. And Trump is, I agree. I think he's making a bad move. Bad move going there. He should have just gone there, just popped up. That would have made sense. Pre-announcing it, wrong.
Yeah, I agree. No, if I think if he had just showed up like a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Just showed up and with a team of investigators saying, nobody seems to be doing this properly. I've got some of my own people.
Yeah.
And then left.
Yeah.
I think that would have been kind of cool, but no.
Anyway.
He's losing it.
I wish there was some really good information. There really isn't. There really isn't. Yeah, but a lot of talk, which is probably why you and I there's not a lot to deconstruct. There's no media, really. The media attention, except whenever Aaron Brockovich shows up, I'm always suspicious.
Yeah.
That
you mentioned that, and I agree with that. When somebody like that shows up, I'd get suspicious, too. Yeah. Now, I only have maybe one clip left.
Okay, let's do that.
But I have to, there's a number of them. I mean, I could do the NFL Vax News, which I thought was interesting, but I'm not completely in on it. Oakland has a ransomware attack going on, which is funny. It's still continuing.
The city of Oakland?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
It's not that entertaining. I also have some follow-up on that chatbot stuff, which I didn't realize that Roos guy you were talking about.
Kevin Roos, yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, how lame can you get?
I told you.
Well, I know. I heard it, and then I heard this other report, and I said, wait a minute. You could have pounded that home harder. Here we go. Here's a uplifting. New overdose drug found in San Francisco. And just listen to these numbers.
Ah, uplifting way to leave the show.
In San Francisco, authorities say traces of a deadly drug called xylazine is being found in the bodies of people who died from an overdose. The street name for the drug is Trank. It's an animal tranquilizer being added to illicit opioids, mainly fentanyl. The tranquilizer is known to cause severe skin lesions. It can leave users with open wounds, lead to infections, and even amputations. Amounts of it were found in 4 out of 145 bodies tested between December 1st of last year and the middle of last month. All of the overdoses involved fentanyl. San Francisco health officials say it's the first time the drug has been identified in overdose deaths in the city.
Wow.
So 140 plus deaths in 90 days is what he described. You didn't put the second half of that in there. So that's how many dead, there's 140 dead bodies laying around San Francisco just constantly because of this fentanyl situation. They don't care. They can't do anything about the fentanyl crisis in the city. Free needles. It's pathetic. And now we got this new, I think they're trying to kill the homeless.
Well, on that tip, I had this in the show notes for the last show, Middle X. You've not heard of this, Middle X. This is now being, according to Exit International, oh yeah, there's a group called Exit International, which is basically about killing yourself, euthanasia. And so it's quite big story in the Netherlands, and they were eyewitnesses to people committing euthanasia with Middle X, which is now they won't publish what it is, but they're saying, in fact, there's a Wikipedia page here. MIDDEL. It's something that comes from the chemical industry, and people are using it to kill themselves. And but no one knows exactly what it is. The newspapers are trying to figure it out, or they're not publishing it because they don't want more people to use it. And even though Middle X is Dutch, because it means middle means compound, I guess, or the something. Yeah, compound. They're not translating, just calling it Middle X. And apparently all your cells just stop accepting oxygen and you just shut down and die.
Huh.
Yeah. And it seems like there's a promotion of this going on.
That whole thing sounds like a promotion.
I don't like it. On that upbeat note, with Big Pharma killing us because they are, we're going to leave you with a couple of end-of-show mixes. We got some good ones. We got brain data here. We got I Am Robert Zolnicki. We got Tom Starkweather, Rolando Gonzalez, Sir Michael Anthony, and Sound Guy Steve. Yeah, we got a good 5 minutes here, but they're all short and dynamite. Coming up next on NoAgendaStream.com, we have the Intergalactic Boombox. Episode number 88, short and sweet. You'll like it a lot. We love the Intergalactic Boombox. Coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region number 6. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I remain.
Who do you remain?
I'm John C. Dvorak.
Oh, okay, just checking. Please remember us at Dvorak.org/NA. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody. Until then, remember, brush your teeth. Adios, mofos, a hooey hooey, and such.
Could you take a quick look at my brain data? Look at my brain.
brain data?
I am Chatbot. You can question me, even though I don't know my ABCs. Ask me anything, and I will make you believe. Need an essay, book report, a summary for the Supreme Court. And if I'm wrong, I won't feel bad to take the blame. You want my advice? Just know, I'm programmed what to say. I may sound precise. It is just like what you hear daily on your TV. Now, I should tell you, I might lie to you. I could be wrong. You are convincible. I am Chatbot.
This is disgusting. A lot of people in here who have absolutely no reason to be lying.
You know, Ron, lots of assurances, but residents there just don't seem to trust what they're being told.
We've gone into hundreds and hundreds of people's houses to test that air. It's good.
We're not getting any numbers about, are you even testing for benzene? What are the levels at or not?
A section of Sulphur Run that is very near the crash site remains severely contaminated. We knew this. We know this.
Since the fire went out, EPA air monitoring has not detected any levels of health concern in the community that are attributed to the train derailment.
We continue to monitor the air. The air is good.
The governor said again today that the water is safe to drink, even though some people have been questioning the test results.
Are you confident enough, sir, that you yourself would drink it?
Absolutely. If I was there right now, I would drink it.
Would you stay here? Would you drink that water?
The water we have tested comes back good.
It has been 2 weeks since a train derailed and caught fire in East Palestine. Tonight, residents there say they are really worried about the aftermath of the chemicals that spilled and were released.
As of today, based on the facts that are there today, FEMA can't do anything.
The giant Chinese balloon that had been floating across parts of the United States has been shot down by an American fighter jet.
Talk about the catch of the day. It's the Chinese spy balloon found by the U.S. Navy.
We are just getting pictures of the Chinese spy balloon shot down off the coast of South Carolina.
The Pentagon is revealing new information tonight about the spy balloon, now believed to be part of an extensive Chinese surveillance operation.
The Pentagon believes another Chinese surveillance balloon is now flying over the U.S.
We have eyes on the balloon falling.
This is an insult to tell the people of Montana we couldn't have shot it down over Montana.
Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher says it should have been shot down before it reached the U.S.
I gave the order to take down these three objects.
Debris from the shoot-down lies scattered across 7 miles.
They can get more information through the debris that they are recovering right now.
I make no apologies for taking down that balloon.
It's the first time an aircraft has been shot down over U.S. territory since World War II.
Our intelligence communities are reporting to me daily and will continue their urgent efforts to do so, and I will communicate that to the Congress.
Hundreds on the ground watch the Top Gun drama unfold.
And nothing right now suggests they were related to China's spy balloon program or that there were surveillance vehicles from any other country.
Hey, it's Dr. Tony Fauci. You might have heard I'm getting into trouble over my new paper. Did you ever think you'd see the day when I'm the one being fact-checked? I already told you, if you question me, you're questioning the science. And that is the worst thing you could do. Hey, so I said a couple of things different over time. Up until now, everyone just kind of went along with it, you know? But now, everyone's getting mad at me. When I lie to yous, you get mad. When I tell yous the truth, you get even madder. I tell yous, I can't catch a break. When am I supposed to? You know what? No, from now on, Dr. Fauci says whatever Dr. Fauci wants to say. The leash is off, baby. Have fun fighting over this one, suckers. And you thought I was retired.
International help is on the way.
The nation embraces light over dark, hope over fear, unity over division, stability over chaos.
A devil's deal. Fighting in Ukraine for freedom. And cash.
So I give the order to take it down.
It's time to go.
600,000 Hiroshima-class atomic bombs exploding every single day on the Earth.
Wow. Wow.
It definitely is an arms race.
And in Ukraine today, every Air Force pilot is a king.
That's what's boiling the oceans, creating these atmospheric rivers and the rain bombs.
We now have in place the toughest sanctions ever introduced by the European Union.
All of this is on record.
NATO is now warning Ukraine is using so much ammunition of all types. Western allies cannot provide it fast enough.
Another unidentified object has been shot down over North American airspace.
Did a piece of the sun really break off recently?
We will track oligarchs trying to hide or to sell their assets to escape sanctions.
Russia is assembling more troops as it prepares for a new military offensive tied to the war's one-year anniversary.
I think the end is just a question of time. Right now it's a question of how many more people, and Zelensky wants to kill of his own people. It's going to be over.
The best podcast in the universe. Mofo. Dvorak.org/NA.
Sensational.